This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 192 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
And as always, my name is John.
And honestly, we really should just entitle this episode, This Is Nothing But One Large Spoiler.
Couldn't have timed that better, huh?
This episode is nothing but one large spoiler.
Well, there's like a couple of things before we get into the spoilers, but basically the brunt of this episode is going to be us talking The Rise of Skywalker, The Mandalorian, the series finale of Mr. Robot, and Crisis on Infinite Earths, which are all, you know, pretty big things. Crisis maybe not as much because there's been a couple of weeks in between, but the rest of them are all fresh things. So, you know, we will give you ample warning that we are about to go into deep spoiler territory.
It's really probably going to be in like 20 minutes. I mean,
if that. Like, you know, I have like a couple of quick shows to talk about, and they're mostly just skimming the surface, and some news items, some interesting news items.
I do have a couple movies to talk about otherwise.
Nice.
But mostly this week in the old Labby household was watching, of course, pro wrestling, but holiday specials.
Hmm.
And most of them are reruns. You know, like we watch Rudolph, Jack Frost, Twas the Night Before Christmas, which is one of my favorites.
Twas.
My all-time favorite, Muppet Family Christmas.
It is the best version.
It is. No, not Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh.
Muppet Family Christmas.
Oh.
The all-time, like, they're... No television show or holiday special will ever do what Muppet Family Christmas managed to pull off. I believe this came out in 1989. It featured Doc from Fraggle Rock going to Fozzie Bear's mother's house. He rented her house for Christmas. She was going to Hawaii.
Was this like the original Airbnb?
Probably, yeah. So Doc and Sprocket show up there to rent the house from Fozzie's mom. Fozzie brings his whole Muppet gang with him to spend the holidays with his mother. So now they're stuck there, and Doc is like, but I rented this house for a nice, quiet Christmas. And she's like, well, I took 3 weeks of surfing lessons for nothing. Because she was going to Hawaii.
And why is she stuck there? Because Fozzie showed up?
Because Fozzie showed up with all his friends. You just can't leave him.
Yeah, you can. You could say, you know what? Suck it. You should have called first.
That's not what a mom does.
I know it's 1989, and we don't have cell phones yet, but...
True. So... also in this episode, Robin and Kermit, they go downstairs, Kermit's downstairs and he calls Robin downstairs and they find,
whoa, this isn't going to like get dark, is it?
In the basement.
Uncle Kermit?
No,
in the basement?
No, no.
Little Robin.
And they find a Fraggle hole.
Oh.
Yeah. Fraggle like cave. And they go in, they meet the Fraggles from Fraggle Rock.
So now that's, I see why you love this thing so
much. Yeah. Then.
It's like an early crossover kind of thing.
Then later on. They found home videos and they start watching them, and it's Muppet Babies. It's them as babies, but it's not cartoon, it's live action.
Oh, interesting.
And Miss Piggy, and there's a lot of Christmas songs in this. Miss Piggy sings Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and you see baby Kermit, baby Gonzo, baby Miss Piggy, baby Animal, baby Rolf the dog, baby
Scooter. Yoda?
Nope. So it's really cool because it's like the only time you ever see live action Muppet Babies. And then the Sesame Street gang shows up. They're cousins, I guess. I don't know. But the friends from Sesame Street show up. And this is before Elmo was huge, so he's a background character. But the only one that's not there is Snuffleupagus.
Because, you know,
he's
imaginary.
But Big Bird is there, Oscar the Grouch, Cookie Monster, Grover, Harry, you know, the two-headed monster. I mean, they're all there. Like, all these characters are there. And it's fantastic because it's like the ultimate crossover, you'll never see this again special from all these spinoffs together. And then after they do this amazing, huge carol at the end, Jim Henson has a cameo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I think it's the only time you ever see Jim Henson actually live on The Muppets. And he's standing there in the kitchen, and he's with Sprocket, the dog. And he goes, ah, Sprocket, I love it when they're happy. Well, these dishes aren't going to wash themselves. Let's get to it. I'll wash and you dry. And he's putting an apron on to do the dishes, and it cuts back to The Muppets. But it's just so cool. Because it's
cool.
It's all the properties plus Jim Henson.
Yep.
And I have a bootleg version from Canada. Because when they put it on TV, I taped it off TV. Mm-hmm. And it had a bunch of songs in it that they had the rights to use for the initial broadcast. But then when they put it on home video, they didn't have the rights to them. So they cut some of the songs out, but then they added some songs in. Mm-hmm. A couple songs in. So when I finally bought, like, I had an old VHS copy that I watched It Was Onion Skin Thin. And then I saw, like, a commercial VHS, and I was jacked, and I bought it. And immediately I'm like, they cut songs. And then the same thing when they put it on DVD. But I think it was iOffer, or maybe it was on eBay back before they had regulations. I bought this copy from Canada where someone had took the DVD release and a very good TV copy and flawlessly edited them together.
Hmm.
So it's really cool, actually. You can actually see, like it'll come back from commercial, and you can see the quality's a little less. And then you'll see, like, the little scene with Fozzie and his mom talking about the stocking at the fire. And then it cuts to, like, crystal clear. So.
Gotcha.
But I got all the songs unedited, uncut. It's pretty awesome. They even did nice cover work art, you know, cover artwork for the box. And
nice.
Put a sticker on the DVD, Muppet Family Christmas. So. We watched that. Christmas Story. Yeah. What about you? Did you watch any holiday specials, classics?
I've forgotten.
You didn't watch any?
I had just forgotten that story took so goddamn long. I
it did not.
I completely forgot what I was doing.
It did not. I'm only 6 minutes in.
No, I haven't watched any holiday stuff. Well, technically. So I was wrapping presents.
Okay.
And my sister hasn't been feeling very holiday-ish. So I was like, come on. Help me wrap some presents. So we were wrapping presents. And I said, I'm going to put on a Christmas movie. So I put on the Movies That Made Us Die Hard episode.
Nice.
Technically, it's Christmas episode because it's Die Hard, which is a Christmas movie.
1,000% it is a Christmas movie. Is it? I'm assuming it's good.
Oh, you haven't watched it?
No, it's one I haven't watched that. I haven't watched that in Ghostbusters yet.
It was phenomenal. Mm. It was so good because Ghostbusters started coming on. I was like, nope, Die Hard. Dude.
Did you watch the Home Alone one yet?
Yes, I watched the Home Alone one.
Dirty Dancing?
We talked about that, yeah. I haven't watched Dirty Dancing.
Okay, it's great.
Yeah.
So the Die Hard one's good?
The Die Hard one is so good. You know, to think, like, they really go into how nobody thought Bruce Willis was going to be an action star. Like, the first poster that came out is that black and white one with, like, half of his face and he's leaning up against the building. Apparently, when they ran the trailer for the first time, most audiences laughed hysterically.
Really?
Because he's Bruce Willis. He's from Moonlighting. He's a schlub. Like, nobody pictured him as an action star to the point where they took all those posters down and put up posters that were just of Nakatomi Plaza and made the tower the main focus of the movie.
That's funny.
They got Bonnie Bedelia, Carl, whatever his name is, you know.
Yeah, from Family Matters.
Yes, and the guy who played the reporter.
Okay.
They got them. They couldn't get Bruce Willis, apparently. Obviously not Alan Rickman.
He passed away.
But, dude, it was really well done. Mm. Like, I could sit here and gush about it for hours.
Oh,
it was just so good.
I'm definitely planning on watching
it. But basically, that is what cemented Bruce Willis as a movie star.
Oh, yeah.
And like they said, you know, then everything beyond that was Die Hard. You know, Die Hard on a bus. Die Hard on a boat. Die Hard in...
It's true.
Yeah. Everything was Die Hard. And it also was the first time Alan Rickman was ever on screen. He had only ever been a theater actor.
No way.
Yeah. And the woman who was coaching him was talking about, you know, oh, he'll be good. Can he hold a gun? No. He had this really effeminate way of holding a gun, just kind of like, she's like, I had to teach him how to hold a gun like a real man because it just wasn't cutting it. But yeah, this was his first time ever being on screen. And so
I didn't realize that.
Think about that. Two of the biggest actors in Hollywood that got their start because they were thrown in this movie.
I do like the story that Kevin Smith tells about Jason Mewes when they showed up for Dogma. Jason Mewes, like, only knew all his lines, but everyone else's as well.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm impressed. I don't want to fuck up with that Rickman guy.
Because it's fucking Alan Rickman.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Honestly, though, check it out. It's so good. And again, it's a Christmas movie.
Right.
And she felt really good. She got into it. She's like, this is really good. I was like, you like that? You got to check out the Toys That Made Us.
Oh, she's never seen those?
She's never seen those.
Oh. So. I kind of envy her.
Yeah. Yeah, because she gets to go.
Because it's all new.
Yeah. But I was like, now that you say, because halfway through, she goes, this is really well produced. I said, yeah, these are really well produced. They're really well done. They know their shit. They did some research. And they cut together because they had this stuntman who just like, every time they pan him, he'd be like, hi.
Yep. And so that, I love how they do that editing.
They had that one cut like every time. Hi.
Or they do the thing where they like in the Dirty Dancing one, they showed footage of Patrick Swayze from like Roadhouse or something.
Yeah.
But the line he said in Roadhouse or whatever it was fit for what they were doing.
Nice.
You know what I mean? But they'll do that. They'll show like footage from other movies, but it fits to what we're seeing.
I will say this. They told that they had some bloopers. Well, they had some oopses.
Yeah.
You know, which they were just like in the scene when they're first shooting out the glass and he's kicking himself across the floor, you could see his fake feet. Like they made these big, basically slippers that look like feet, and you could see them on him. Like they paused the screen and pointed an arrow at it. And one of the crown jewels of the whole thing was they kept trying to figure out, how do we get them out? You know, how are they going to escape? How are they going to get out of here with the money? What's the plan? And he came up, I won't tell you how he did it, but he came up with the idea of the ambulance. And he was like, that's it. It's in the back of the truck. Well, they loved it. They drove the ambulance out. You know, they were like, this ties everything in together. This is perfect. And then they started showing the movie to people. And 10 minutes in, the truck shows up. The back opens up. All the bad guys walk out. There's no fucking ambulance in there. And they're just like, there's no ambulance. Because they had shot that way before.
Oh.
And then the ambulance was added in at like the 11th hour. And they're like, and the guy just goes, fuck it. Put it out there. I don't care. He goes, people are going to get mad. And they're going to go, where's the ambulance? I don't care. Maybe they'll enjoy the rest of the movie. And they sure fucking did.
I don't think anyone noticed. Cause I, nope. I never.
I didn't either.
You know, we had this one guy that was a diehard fan. Diehard. When I worked at Movie Gallery on Bangor Street, he would come in like.
Oh, he wasn't Ben?
No, he was like Ben. He'd come in and, oh, that Bruce Willis, he's a real guy. I was going to rent Die Hards. He'd rent Die Hard 1, 2, and 3 for 5 nights, bring him back. About a week later, he'd come back again. Oh, I really like that Bruce Willis. He's really good in these movies. But it wasn't creepy, like, sexual. It was just that's the way he talked. He had that murmur talk going on. And I was like, after, like, I don't know, 7 months, I'm like, have you ever thought about buying these? You can do that? Yeah. And I checked the sell through. I'm like, yeah, they got VHS 3-pack. It's $15.99. I mean, I can order it if you want. I'll have to think about that. Oh, okay. So I ordered it for him. And then he came in to rent the movies. And I'm like, no, you should just buy them. And so he did. And never saw him again. I look back at his account history like a few weeks later. I'm like, I've never seen that guy back since he bought the Die Hard movies.
And see,
when I looked at his account history, he rented nothing but Die Hard 1, 2, and 3.
And see, your bosses would have been like, you lost us a customer. That was revenue. But you did the right thing.
I did the right thing. All this guy ever rented was Die Hard 1, 2, and 3.
It's your fault that Movie Gallery went out of business.
Have you ever watched another Bruce Willis movie?
Why would you need to? He's in Die Hard.
Yes, it's my fault that Movie Gallery went out of business. You are correct.
You cost them that $5 a week.
So I did watch the Beanie Baby episode of Schooled.
Oh. I was like, I was thinking the toys that made us, and I'm like, not bad.
Oh, there's an episode they could probably make on the toys that made us.
Sure they could.
Yeah. I was all right.
Yeah.
I didn't like the let's conclude every religion part.
I didn't like that. I also wasn't a big fan of CB really trying to undercut Barry. Like, dude, they're dating. Stop this.
Yeah.
You know, at least he finally saw the light in the end and, you know, gave him credit for it. I like when Barry came in there and he like knew everything and he's like, yeah, dude, I used to be a screw up and then I just kind of buckled down, decided I wanted to do something. And it turns out I'm a really good doctor. God, you really are a great guy once I get to know you. Yeah, people say that a lot about me.
So it's the only TV show I watched that's not one of our spoilery ones.
I watched a show on Netflix called The Politician. Because it showed up a few times for me.
I don't think I've seen that one come up at all.
It's high school. It's a dark comedy. It's kind of like a Rushmore or Election. It's got a few people that you might recognize. You probably wouldn't.
Gwyneth Paltrow, Jessica Lange, Zoe Dutch. Probably I'd recognize them.
Yeah. And the main character, Ben, whatever his name, Ben Platt. Yeah, I wanted to say Ben Schwartz, but that's not it. So basically, he is running for student council president because he wants to get into Harvard one day. He wants to be president of the United States one day.
He's 26 years old. How is he pulling that one off?
He looks very young, dude.
Okay.
So anyway, he wants to be president one day, so he wants to get into Harvard, so he wants to be student council president. And the whole show kind of revolves around this election. It's really – it's dark and it's weird, and every episode has a new kind of twist to it. But in the first episode, like, this guy that he knows that we get introduced to named River says that he's going to run for president. And the kids – Ben's like, dude, you will ruin me. Everybody likes you. You're gorgeous. You're handsome. You're funny. You're friendly. Everyone likes you. I will lose if you run. And he's like, sorry, I just got to do this. And by the end of the episode, River shoots himself right in front of Ben, just kills himself. And it kind of sets off this whole chain of events. And again, it's a dark comedy. So, you know, it's never like slapsticky, but there's a lot of stuff that happens in here that's very bizarre.
This is Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk.
Yes, yes. That's the other thing that I wanted to tell you. I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
I can't give it a hard sell. I don't know that you would like it. You know, a lot of the dialogue is very intelligent. That's no dig on you. It's intelligent, but it's very dryly given. You know, he catches his friend making out with his girlfriend. And his biggest complaint to him is, you can't do this. This is going to ruin my chances to be president. You're going to be in the White House with me someday. You need to just keep it in your pants and knock this off. I'm supposed to be with her. Just cut it out. You can't tank my chances. Like, he's not so much upset about the fact that he's with his girl. So, I don't know. It's weird.
Interesting.
Again, I can't give it a hard sell, but I'm up to, like, episode 6 now, and I've been enjoying it.
Well... I know The Witcher came out Friday.
Yes.
I have not watched any yet.
I watched the first episode.
I have a half a day tomorrow.
Yep.
And then I don't work again until the following Monday. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to watch some in between.
Good. I will say I watched the first episode. I drew a lot of parallels to the game. They really – like, I've been seeing crap online about this. You know, oh, it's convoluted and it's out of order. And I haven't gotten past the first episode, but I really, really dig it. It feels like the game. It feels like that dark, dirty, gritty world that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested to watch more and to have you watch some. We can talk about it.
Well, I've never played the game either, so.
Right. You don't need to. You know, it helps because I'm watching this stuff and I'm like, oh, I know that. Oh, I know what's going on there. Apparently the big controversy right now, or the thing that people can't get over, is that it has a lot of flashbacks, flash forwards. The timelines seem to be running oddly.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever, I'll see. The other thing that I will mention for TV, Eddie Murphy showed up on Saturday Night Live this week.
He hosted, and I saw some clips of that.
It was phenomenal.
He brought back Gumby. He brought back Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
He brought back Buckwheat.
Bill Cosby's lawyer called him a black slave or slave of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Or something.
Told him
like
he
that.
Should escape the plantation and not go running back to the slave owners that are Hollywood. Well, because basically, did you hear his joke? He went out there during his open monologue and he's like, you know what? If 30 years ago you had told me, Eddie, at this point, you're going to be the stay-at-home family man dad and Bill Cosby's going to be in jail, I would have taken that bet. Apparently Cosby's guys didn't like that much.
Yeah, well, can you blame them?
But still, they need to shut up. Yeah. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny as well. No, it's...
It was good. It was good seeing Eddie back on there, his classic characters. And I liked... You could see online they do side-by-sides. Where you could see, like, his original Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
Oh, that's really cool.
I like that this Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, too, was all about gentrification. Can you say gentrification? A bunch of white people came in, waved a bunch of money around, and all the black people disappeared.
True. It was cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool seeing him host. And
yep.
'Cause he hasn't been on the show in forever.
I know.
And
he hasn't been anywhere in forever.
No, he hasn't. And, you know, it's funny. Everything he's done has been really kind of tame. And then he did Dolomite's My Name, which got him back into wanting to do stand-up comedy, which got him doing Coming to America 2, Beverly Hills Cop 4, and then hosting Saturday Night Live, Eddie Murphy that we remember, basically. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm good with it. That's it for me, other than the spoilery stuff and some news and trailers.
The wife and I, we watched that movie Noelle on Disney Plus with Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader.
Oh, how's that?
It's decent.
I love both of them.
So. Yeah, it's decent. I mean, basically, it's a retelling of Santa Claus. Anna Kendrick is Santa Claus's daughter. Bill Hader is Santa Claus's son. Santa Claus dies.
So they're brother and sister?
Yes.
Okay.
Santa Claus dies. And so Bill Hader's responsibility is to take over as the 24th generation of Kringle to be Santa Claus. Of course, you live at the North Pole with all the elves, et cetera, and they have magic, blah, blah, blah. But all these natural things that should just come to Santa Claus, as far as being able to understand every language or just see if someone's naughty or nice by seeing what's inside them, et cetera, doesn't come to Bill Hader.
Oh, I got you.
They do Anna Kendrick.
Oh. Yeah. So she's the next Santa Claus.
Basically, yeah. Oh, spoiled it. It's been out since November. I'm not worried about it.
This is the 23rd of December, by the way, so we're the eve of Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
If you were going to watch a Christmas movie, it would have been by now.
So it was decent.
Yeah.
I decided to check out, the wife and I did. I just kind of threw it on, figured she was going to bed. She got sucked into it, ended up staying up until it was over. We watched A Christmas Carol. The new one with Guy Pearce as Scrooge.
See, I was going to ask you that earlier. It's the FX version.
Well, it's actually a BBC FX collaboration.
Gotcha.
Over in the BBC, it's a miniseries. It comes out in three parts. Tom Hardy and Ridley Scott are apparently executive producers. This is, it's rated TVMA.
Okay.
They do drop the F-bomb.
Oh, good.
Guy Pearce is Ebenezer Scrooge. Andy Serkis is Ghost of Christmas Past. Stephen Graham is Jacob Marley. Charlotte Riley plays Ghost of Christmas Present. Jason Fleming is Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. It was really good. It's very adult. It really delves deep into Scrooge's kind of history as a child. And it's pretty dark at times. And the Cratchits, you know, like in every version you see, like Bob Cratchit and his wife, like, mm-hmm. you know, they don't really like Scrooge, but they thank him for what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Not in this one.
No.
Nope. They don't like Scrooge. But they know they have to deal with him because that's where he works. And it's hard to find a job. You know? It was dark. It was good. It was 3 hours long.
That would be why it's a miniseries over there.
Yeah. It was 3 hours long, and we watched the whole dang thing.
Wow.
Up until midnight when we had to pause it when our son threw up. And then we had to go clean all that up and then go finish the last 12 minutes.
What caused him to throw up?
He kind of woke up, and we think he just was coughing too hard because he was fine. He didn't throw up again. He was fine the next day. He wasn't sick leading up to it, but... Hmm. But yeah, so we stayed up till midnight to watch this thing.
Nice.
No, Kate does not stay up that late. But yeah, it was really, I really enjoyed it. So I would definitely recommend it if you like the story of it.
Okay.
I mean, my favorite version of A Christmas Carol is the 1938 Reginald Owens version. I watch that every year on Christmas Eve. I'll watch it tomorrow night as well. It's only like 65 minutes long or 70 minutes long, you know. Boy, that is definitely not as dark as this is, and that movie's in black and white. Okay, so.
Wow, are you, like, practicing stand-up routine tonight?
I don't know, but I'm just busting up bad dad joke
after another. Okay, as long as you got the right adjectives in there.
But yeah, so, I mean, I think it's worth checking out.
Cool, yeah, I had seen it pop up there, and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to watch it or not. And earlier when you were talking about Christmas stuff, I meant to ask you, so good.
The only other stuff I have to talk about, Skywalker, Crisis, Mandalorian.
Virgin River?
Oh, that's right. Oh, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, you talked about that last week.
Because it's been over a week since we watched that entire series.
Oh, yeah.
We watched all of Virgin River.
Yes.
I would give that a recommend as well.
Yes, you did.
Yep.
It's a rerun, Harold.
Yeah, it is a rerun, Harold.
Who's Harold?
My grandfather.
Oh, yeah.
He's dead. Oh, my grandma, he would talk like this and tell a story, yes, similar to Eeyore, and he'd start telling you a story.
And grandmother would bust
You've already him heard it, and Grammy Connie would go, "That's a rerun, Harold." And he'd go, "Maybe they'd like to hear it again."
Yeah.
Yep.
Saw a few trailers this week. I know I shared two of them with you.
Yeah, I wrote down IP Man 4 and I flagged it to watch it again, but I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch IP Man 4. I literally only watched that. I've never watched any of the IP Man movies. I literally only watched that trailer so that I could send it to you and then say, we can talk about this.
Okay, well, I mean, I can hit pause and watch it real quick.
Please do. I feel insulted now.
All right, well, hold your horses.
Well, that was the longest half hour ever.
So after watching the IP 4 Man trailer.
IP Man 4.
That was completely unintentional, but it works for the pattern.
Mike just said that he pees for men. IP 4 Man.
The IP Man Part 4.
The finale.
The finale trailer. I gotta say.
That's a trailer.
That's a trailer, all right. Yeah. Here's the thing. I really enjoyed the first three movies.
Yeah.
I'll watch this one eventually. I don't like the...
Doesn't look that...
IP4 Man... IP Man comes to San Francisco, meets Bruce Lee, and he fights this U.S. Marine who thinks Kung Fu is the shit, and not as good as apparently his U.S. Marine called Karate. And it just... I don't know.
You realize that's now the title of the episode. IP4 Man.
Fine. It should be spoilers, IP4
nope.
Man. Yeah, the first three movies I really enjoyed, but they were made for the Chinese market, Hong Kong market.
Which it almost seemed like this one was too in the beginning, where it was all dubbed.
I felt like it was, but it clearly seems to me they're trying to break into the U.S. market with this. And yeah.
It took a hard left. And
it's
all
almost
of a sudden.
Yeah, it's for me, it's a lot similar to how much I loved the first Matrix, and then I didn't care for the second and third one because they got all shiny bright. And it's almost because they're trying to cater to a larger audience. And I think that's what they're doing here. It's like you're trying to cater to a larger audience. Well, why are you trying to cater to this U.S. market? Oh, because they like the first three? Well, then make the fourth one the same way you made the first three, and they'll still watch it.
It's true.
I have determined that people either will watch subtitle movies or they won't. You know, you know what I mean? I've never met anyone that's just like, well, I'll watch it if it's this, but I won't watch it. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, I get you. I feel it.
I don't know any fans of In Between. Like, you got me Police Story 1 and 2 on Criterion Collection Blu-ray for Christmas. Thank you.
I've heard that rumor.
No, you gave it to me. I opened it last week after the episode. Anyways.
Allegedly.
After we recorded. No, it actually happened. They're both in Mandarin with English subtitles. Or you can watch them English dub. I'm going to watch them in Mandarin English subtitles.
Because that's how it was made to be seen.
That's how it was made to be seen. And they're badass friggin' movies. And like Jackie Chan said, the action is so good. If you do the action well enough, then the dialogue doesn't even matter.
Right.
Realistically.
That's how Jet Li survived this long.
Yeah.
You ever heard that guy talk?
Yes. What was that one he did? Was it Kiss of the Dragon with Bridget Fonda?
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I enjoyed the flick, but...
So that was one trailer.
Yep.
I saw a trailer that you'll probably have no interest in. It's for a Netflix series called Medical Police. And it's from a bunch of comedy people like Rob Hubel, who have done things in the past like Children's Hospital and Adult Swim, or NTSVSDU. It's meant to be an absurd, over-the-top comedy kind of thing, almost like a Naked Gun which I know you're not a fan of those type of things. I think it looks great. Well, you know, they're doctors who are also cops.
See, it was funny because I enjoyed the original Naked Gun and Airplane. But then, like, just at some point,
Benetites.
Oh, that's tremendously good.
Spaceballs.
Oh, it's amazing. But then it did just hit a point where I was like, eh.
Yeah. Well, I feel like for me, it was when we crossed over from the classics. Like, Naked Gun was based on the Police Files TV show, which is the same thing. Police Squad, thank you. And then Naked Gun 2 and 3, I know, it's 2 and a half and 33.
33 and a third, yeah.
Those felt like cash-ins.
Yep.
You know, they were just trying to get more money.
Hey, nice beaver. She passes down the stuff, beaver.
All right. Well, that was the first one.
Yeah, it was.
But then we have the Mel Brooks ones.
Oh, but see, I don't...
Young Frankenstein, Spaceballs, Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
I don't find any of those to be parodies.
No.
I just think they're good movies.
And then when it turned the corner for me was when the Wayans brothers started doing the Scary Movie movies.
Oh, see, for me it was National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1.
See, I still liked parts of that.
Yeah.
It was one of the tamest roles Sam Jackson was ever in because Emilio Estevez was the crazy one and Sam Jackson had to be the straight
man. That's true, yeah.
There was a lot of that that I kind of like. One of my favorite lines that I used to quote with my ex all the time was right at the very beginning when Tim Curry is dressed up as like a Girl Scout.
Yeah.
Wilderness Girls. It was frigging. I liked some of that stuff. But the scary movies where they didn't just pick one movie and – You're right. National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1, they did the same thing where they kind of like it was Lethal Weapon, but it was also like they had other stuff in there.
Yeah.
But Scary Movies, they did that a lot. It was like every kind of scary movie.
See, here's my thing. Like with National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1.
Yep.
Hot Shots.
Yes.
Scary Movie.
Yep.
Shriek, If You Know What You Did Last Summer. All those movies are parodies of other, like, a bunch of different movies.
A bunch, yes.
Yeah. Whereas I look at Robin Hood Men in Tights, it's just another version of Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah.
And even Spaceballs,
it's Star Wars.
It's Star Wars. I get it. But it was kind of like the Family Guy, Blue Harvest and all those. I love those. I think those are great. Because it's done in a different way. Spaceballs is done in a serious way almost.
Yeah. Yeah. It wanted to be its own thing. It was an homage more than it was a parody.
Homage, yeah.
And
it's like, because we love Weird Al.
Exactly.
People that listen to this know that.
They better.
They just did a Sunday morning. It's a CBS Sunday morning. It's like my favorite news show because it's all, it's not like headlines. It's all human interest stories or person of interest stories or whatever. And they talked to Mel Brooks last week ago Sunday. And it was really interesting. They did a nice interview with him.
Do more stuff.
Well, that's kind of what they talked about.
Oh, okay.
But the big thing they brought up was Blazing Saddles. And
how it couldn't fly today.
He goes, do you think you can make Blazing Saddles today? He goes, oh, God, no. No. You couldn't make that today at all.
No.
I mean, there's so much. I mean, I'm not going to say racism, but there's just so much off-color humor and inappropriateness. Like when the sheriff and Gene Wilder are dressed up like Klansmen and they see the sheriff's hands because he's black, the back of his hand, and he goes, like, I told you to wash up after cross burning, and he starts wiping his hand off, and then he turns his hand over because the palm's a lighter color.
Right.
See, look, it's coming off. Like, you know, or like when the sheriff pulls the gun on himself.
Yes.
And he says what he says. Or like, they're trying to get the Klan's guy's attention. And Gio goes, hey, boys, look what I got. And he pulls the sheriff out. He goes, where are all the white women at? And they just run at you. You know what I mean? Like, you could not make that today. But it's hilarious.
Nope.
It is so hilarious. The campfire scene of them sitting around the farting for 15 minutes or whatever it was.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Yeah. And they all pull guns on him. And he's like, no, it's the paperwork showing that I'm the sheriff. And the welcome sheriff sign zips up like it's a pole shade.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know. There's so many good things about. Look at that hand. Steady as a rock. But this is my shooting hand. You know, like. Now we got to go watch Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. It's that's the type of thing that should be done every year. Yeah. You know, at least.
But anyhow.
The woman in the window. Getting back to trailers.
Yes, sorry. It's a, like an updated version of Rear Window.
Pretty much,
of Rear Window. Yeah. I think it looks great.
Except in Rear Window, he was just, he had the broken leg, so he couldn't get out.
Right.
This one, she's an extreme agoraphobic.
And they've done this, the storyline's been done a bunch.
Yeah.
And this is just a new twist of that storyline, and I think it looks great.
Because basically she meets a woman, and it's supposedly her neighbor's wife, yeah. And then, no, this is my wife, and are they messing with her? And what's going? Yeah, I think it looks great.
Yeah. Amy Adams, right?
Yep. Yep. Martin suggested that one.
Yes. Good, yeah, call, good call, Martin, yeah.
And then on that one, I raised him Tenet.
Oh, my God.
Christopher Nolan's new project that he just kind of unveiled in one day and was like, hey, the name's Tenet. Tomorrow's the trailer.
Yeah.
And fuck.
I can't even describe this trailer. Just go watch it.
Yeah, it's really hard to describe because I don't know what the fuck's going on.
I want to see this.
I do too.
And I liked how at the end of the trailer it said, you should watch this trailer in movie theater for a full experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate movies that are made to be watched in the theater. Like, there's a lot of movies I want to see in the theater,
mm-hmm.
but they're not all made to be watched in the theater. You know what I mean? Like, Avatar in 3D in the theater was amazing.
Yes.
Avatar at home on TV, it's okay.
Yep.
You know? This is almost like something I want to see in IMAX.
Mm. Apparently, some screenings of Rise of Skywalker had an extended, like, 6-minute trailer for this movie.
I'm glad we didn't get that.
I am too. Because I don't like the extended, like, oh, we're going to show you 10 minutes of this movie. Why?
Is it because we got 30 minutes of trailers at Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, we did.
Holy shit. They had commercials in between the trailers. Like, I've never seen that before.
The last movie that I had seen, which I think was, I was about to say Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. It was A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Had the same thing. You know, where it was like trailer, 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 commercial, trailer, trailer, commercial. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So those are my trailers. News, I'll give you a couple of rundowns.
Well, hold on a second, real quick.
Yeah.
At Rise of Skywalker, we had an extended Top Gun Maverick trailer.
Yeah.
Which makes me want to watch the movie, actually, now.
Great.
Not in theaters. We got Black Widow, Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah.
That was cool to see on the big screen. 1917? Or no, I've just seen that trailer so many times.
Yeah. By the way, you said that it's not playing in Augusta, but I saw a commercial on TV, and it said, in select theaters, Christmas, January 10th.
So January 10th, the only place I could find it listed, even on January 10th,
mm-hmm.
is the Nickelodeon in Portland.
Interesting. I can't imagine.
The Art House theaters don't have it listed as coming. Regal doesn't have it listed as a coming soon movie. Fandango, like, yeah.
It's a war movie. I can't imagine that they're going to be like, no, we don't need to show that one.
But it's less than 3 weeks out, and they don't have it listed as coming soon. Regal has other movies posted that are premiering after that,
mm-hmm.
but not this one.
Maybe it'll come out of nowhere.
I'm off November, January 2nd and 3rd. That's my vacation days because I have my kids, and I was hoping to take my son to go see it because he loves World War II movies, and this is a World War I movie, but I figured he'd like it anyways. Mm-hmm.
To think what some of the other trailers were that we saw. Apparently it was nothing that really...
We got a Doolittle trailer.
Oh, yeah.
We got... I guess really the Top Gun Maverick is the only new trailer I saw.
Yeah. Yeah, because usually, like, if I see a new trailer, I'll open my phone right up and take it out. So that I could talk. I didn't see anything that.
News?
Daybreak has been canceled by Netflix. I don't know if you even checked out any of that. I checked out like the first two or three episodes. It's that one. It's the apocalypse. All adults have turned into zombies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Freakers. And the kids now run. It's actually kind of cool because like each of the cliques has their own part of the city that they're running.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. Matthew Broderick is in it. He's pretty cool.
I didn't know that.
Yep. But it's already been canceled, so they're only going to do the one season.
Okay.
It's based on a comic, though. The Lucifer's showrunner was talking about what we'll get into a little bit later on, which was the scene in Crisis where they...
Sure.
And he said that all of that was, you know, they came up with that. He didn't have anything to do with it. And he's like, and it worked. But he joked that he would really like to explore a spinoff show that shows the early days of Lucifer and Constantine.
Yes,
I would watch the fuck.
I would watch the hell out of that.
Yep. We could explore whatever it was that he did to help me.
So. Mm-hmm. My stove does that.
It sounds like the pilot light.
It is the pilot light clicking.
Okay.
And I don't know why it's doing that.
I hope we're not going to blow up. That really put a damper on my Christmas.
It did that a couple years ago for like a week.
Damn.
Every once in a while it would just click.
Maybe it's just like a warning noise to let you know if the pilot's out or something. I don't know.
No, because the oven doesn't have a pilot. It's electric. So when you turn it on, an electric, it's propane, but when you turn it on, electricity then heats up the thing, which then sparks the propane. So when you turn the oven on, the propane then kicks on, the thing heats up.
You may want to look into this.
No, we had that element replaced. And that wasn't the oven, that was the stovetop.
Right. Still, that sounds like electricity arcing to light fire.
Yeah, no, I did have them look at it, okay. And they said, nope, okay.
Okay.
There's no propane on, so.
Yeah. Just worry about you, man.
That's fine.
Okay. I'll take my word for it.
It was going to blow up. It's way over there.
So, we don't know much about this. Way over there.
The delayed reaction in that.
It's like 12 feet away.
The delayed reaction, that was absolutely awesome. So we don't know much about this.
But Netflix is making a He-Man CGI show. We've seen the poster.
Yep.
I'm not interested already.
I saw a Skeletor poster and I went, well, that looks like shit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm already not interested. This is not movie or TV related, but did you see that The Far Side came back?
Dude, in my news, The Far Side is back.
I love his cartoon that he put up to show.
Yes.
The guy who was thawing out the iceberg with all the characters. He's got like a hairdryer to thaw it out.
I can't believe 25 years. It's been 25 years since he stopped doing original.
And the reason that he's come back now is because he said he was just exhausted from fighting all these people who keep putting his stuff up against his will.
Yep.
Like he keeps having to do lawsuits about these people who, you know, oh, they're going to try to make money off his stuff. He's like, no. Stop it. So fine. He's come out of the woodwork. Mostly it's going to be his reruns, his best ones.
He's going to have like a new one a month or something like that. A new one a week.
Dude, if he did it.
It's fine.
It sounds like those toys that you get as a kid with the two balls that clack together. Yeah, if he did a new one a year, that would be great. But a new one a month is phenomenal.
I remember you weren't there anymore, but I found a Far Side book like in the dump bin at Hannaford for the like 50 cents for the cat hospital gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought it and I brought it to work and I made mention to Jenna. I'm like, Jenna, Far Side, it's awesome. You got to check this out. And she's like, what is the Far Side? I'm like, ah, ignorant youth. I mean, it ended long before she was born.
Right.
4 years. So I go, you have to check this out here. And so I kind of gave her the book and she kind of looked at it. And she's like, oh, whatever. And she passed. I was like, no, fine. I will read them to you. So then I proceeded to read her the comics and I described the panels because she wouldn't look at them. It was funny to everybody in the room, but her. So when Far Side came back, I was like, hey, the Far Side's back. She's like, I'll fucking read it, okay?
Wow.
What's your favorite Far Side comic?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
My favorite one is there's cavemen, and there's aliens laying all over the place, and their spaceship has crashed. And one caveman says to the other, bury everything, pretend nothing happened. And the bottom is early government cover-ups.
My dad had a T-shirt that then I wore to school multiple times, which was the classic, you're seeing things through the hunter scope.
Yes.
Pointing at a deer, and he's pointing at his buddy like, hey, get him instead.
That reminds me of the deer that had, like, the birthmark on his chest of a bullseye.
Birthmark Hal. Or the buzzer with the cowboy hat. Hey, everybody, I'm a cowboy. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Yeah, I saw them back. I'm very excited.
Me too. Okay. Cats the movie that's out in theaters now. Did you hear about this?
That looks like garbage, sure.
Well, they're taking care of it. They're sending a digitally upgraded version to all theaters right now. Because apparently there were some things that they forgot to fix, like Judi Dench still has human hands instead of cat hands. So a new version is being rolled out to theaters. It's like a day one patch for a game. They're like, oh, we got to fix this. Here you go. This is the future, though, because everything's going to go digital eventually.
Yeah.
So they're just going to be sending, you know, it's going to be like you and I being able to access Disney Plus. That's what movie theaters are going to have. They're going to pay for a subscription or something, and they're going to be able to access it. And then they'll be like, oh, you're going to want to run a firmware update to make sure that your projectors are in line, and then get the most updated version of this movie, or else you're going to be showing people the crappy one. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, I just...
Oh, I know. You're a purist. You want to see the old reel-to-reel.
Well, it's not just that, but, like, to make the movie right the first time.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Or just
how
saying,
many millions of dollars did they fucking spend on this movie, and somehow there's no one doing their continuity job to notice?
Well, here's the kicker. Essentially what this is, you know how they had that trailer for Sonic, and yeah, the internet freaked out, and they said, okay, we're going to go back to basics, and we're going to redesign him. And then they came out with a new trailer.
It looks good, though.
And it looks good.
Yeah.
Imagine if they put the movie out in theaters, and everyone said, this is a piece of shit, and they went, okay, hold on. And then, like, a week later, you went to buy tickets for it, and it was a different movie because they had added it in then.
Yeah.
That's essentially what this is.
Right.
It's fucking nuts.
Or it's like George Lucas, 30 years later, changing his original movie, and you have some people defending him, saying, like, well, it's his vision, and
fuck that,
his vision modifies all the time, and so he wanted to change the aspect of the story. No.
Han shot first.
Yes, he did.
I will depend that to the day that I die.
Cats had a budget of $95 million.
What did it make in the first week? $4
million? 10.9.
Ooh! Yeah, that was doomed to fail from the beginning.
Well, it kind of was. I mean, realistically, if you're going to open a movie up against Star Wars, whose budget was $250 to $300 million,
yeah,
and their opening weekend was half a billion, yeah, you know? I mean,
well, not only that, they could have opened it against nothing.
Yeah.
And people still looked at that and went, the fuck is this? It's Cats. Okay.
But it's got James Corden and Judi Dench and Taylor Swift and Ian McKellen and Jennifer Hudson and Iris Elba and Rebel Wilson.
Yeah, moving on. You remember the 2000 flick High Fidelity with John Cusack?
Yeah, they're making that into a TV series.
Yeah, on Hulu.
Yeah.
With Zoe Kravitz, and it's going to be more modern.
Yep.
So, like, she's dealing with gentrification of her neighborhood.
Right.
And I'll watch it.
If it's anything like High Fidelity, I'll watch it. Happily.
Yeah, I was thinking back on High Fidelity. Maddie loved that. That was like one of her favorite movies. But the thing is, if you look back at that movie, Jack Black was awesome. The guy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure, the guy who would later go on to be one of the Lem in Better Off Ted, you know, one of the lab assistants.
Yes. Yes.
Those two were awesome. They had some of the best dialogue, some of the best scenes in there. John Cusack was a piece of shit. Essentially, he's going back over the top heartbreaks of his life, and he was a piece of shit to all of them. Like, he was a self-entitled white guy who thought that he deserved love from all these people, and he deserved happiness, and they should be the ones to give it to him. And he was just basically a dick. So I'm hoping that this take on it is a little bit more balanced. What are you looking up?
I was just trying to see something real quick about it. About the movie.
Oh, yeah?
Had anything like, you know...
It's based on a book.
Series. Yes, it's based on a book, yeah. High Fidelity TV show, Hulu original, February 14th, 2020. That's what I was looking for.
Valentine's Day. Yeah. Interesting. I will check it out. Now here, this is going to be on your shelf, my friend. I know this is going to be on your shelf. There is a Blu-ray 2-disc collector's edition coming out for The Wizard.
Oh,
The Wizard. The original video game movie with That's Fred badass. Savage. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Nice little artwork that looks kind of Mario inspired. Yep. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. But anyway.
Any other news?
That's it for news for me.
Okay, well, I will then give you guys your warning of we're going to talk about spoilery shit.
I do want to say this real quick before we get into the spoilers. We're going to get into this in a minute, but I just wanted to say for anybody who's been listening to the podcast who, you know, stops at these spoilers and says, okay, you know, I want to watch it myself, and you have every right to do that. However, I just want to say, since you might miss this not listening in, I'll talk more in detail about this, but I have to say that as of last night, I have now put Mr. Robot as one of my top five, maybe top three TV shows of all time.
Oh, wow.
I think that this show in its entirety was one of the most phenomenal things that I have seen in forever. And I urge everybody to go out and watch this show. You can catch first three seasons on Amazon Prime, and it's just fucking phenomenal. And we'll get into that more in a little bit here. But I just, in case people were shutting off, I just want you to know that the reason that we're, you know, it's not just because these are spoilery. You know, this show deserves to be watched without listening to somebody describe it first.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
We're going to talk about Crisis on Infinite Earths first.
Yep.
If you want to listen to that, if you've already caught up, because we did give that kind of a weak breather, whereas Mr. Robot was just on last night.
Right. So
Rise of Skywalker was just on.
Crisis.
Yeah.
Mandalorian.
Yep.
And then either Mr. Robot or Rise of Skywalker.
Either one, yeah. But definitely Crisis first.
Yep. Let's get into Crisis. So, spoiler time, folks.
All right. So, just overview, parts 1, 2, and 3. What did you think?
Loved them.
Me too.
Had so many fucking issues, I couldn't count it on two hands, but loved them.
Yep.
I loved that every Earth got its own name, and yes, that a lot of them corresponded, like Robert Wool was on Earth 89.
Yep. Burt Ward was on Earth 66.
Holy Crimson Skies of Death!
I liked, because we kept saying, oh, they're going to have this cameo, this cameo, this cameo, this cameo. It's like, how the hell are they going to get all these people on the show? I think the way they handled it was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally cut to, like, Robert Wool sitting on a bench, and they played the Batman 89 music, and he was on Earth 89. And he can see, like, the sky's turning to crimson red, and he looks back, and he sees the bat symbols, and he's like, I hope you can see this big guy. And then they fade away. And then it cuts to Earth 66. Same thing. Burt Ward's walking his dog. Like you said, Holy Crimson Skies of Death. I mean, I loved it. I loved how they handled all those.
Yep.
And, like, we got to see
Next, we saw Will Wheaton as a doomsayer.
Yes, that was hilarious.
Not a Batman, but, you know.
But, no, like, we got to see the Huntress from Birds of Prey. Her cameo, they had her cameo. That was awesome.
That was kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was.
You know, she's running across the rooftop, and she's talking to Oracle, and then Oracle disappears. She's like, Oracle, Oracle.
Now, was Oracle Barbara? Was it actually, yes. It's not Katie Sackhoff. I don't know why I'm thinking her name, but the actress.
I'll look it up. You keep talking.
No, I can't, because I'm thinking of that blonde girl.
It's been so long.
Yeah, I know. She was in Mutant X TV series there.
Oh, ho, ho. Keep talking.
Yeah. But we saw all these cameos they talked about, and a lot of them.
Dina Meyer,
yes. They just kept cutting, like they cut to them and their Earth would end.
Did you realize Shamar Moore was in that, Birds of Prey?
Yes. Oh. Same thing they cut to, I can't remember the Earth number, but they had the cameo from the guys from...
Mia Sara was Harley Quinn?
Yep.
Wow. I'm going to go back and watch this again.
It's on CW Seed, if you want to watch it with commercials.
Gross.
Teen Titans? The DC show?
No.
No?
I've never watched it.
No. They had a cameo of them as one of the Earths that got wiped out.
Yep.
I mean, so that's kind of cool. They tied in what we're seeing now, but I do love how they incorporated, all the TV shows. And then later on, when they incorporated Lucifer, like we had talked about, and he was Earth 666.
Yes.
You know, and I like how they tied in everything.
Yes.
Some people had more of lines than others, but it was so cool, though.
In prior crossovers, it was like, let's try to make sure that we kind of wedge this person into this episode, you know? Oh, make sure Supergirl somehow gets wedged into Flash's episode type of thing.
Right.
You know, whereas in this one, they gave them quick cameos. You know, Robert Wool, they had him for what, all of 5 seconds on the set?
Not long at all, yeah. Like, was it... I had, there we go. This was the, this story contains spoilers, but it's the wackiest cameos in Crisis Infinite Earths. It is Will Wheaton, like you said, who did voice work on Teen Titans and Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, that's why.
He was, like you said, the Doomsday Sayer.
Yep.
Stephen Lobo, who was on The X-Files, Supernatural, and he was on Smallville. He made appearances as Jim Corrigan, otherwise known as Spectre.
Oh, yeah.
A character with godlike powers in the comics.
That was a weird setup there.
Yeah, that's why it was not inconceivable for him to appear in Oliver Queen's version of Purgatory.
Gotcha.
John Cryer, obviously, we know why he was in there.
Right.
Griffith Newman, the Tick. Not officially part of the DC Comics continuity, however. He played Arthur in the short-lived Amazon live-action series as the Quizmaster informs Ray and Sarah they've lost the game at the bar trivia they're playing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Ashley Scott, Birds of Prey.
Yes.
Yep. So maybe a quick appearance as the Huntress, Earth 203. Before, of course, you know. John Wesley Shipp, I will talk about that later.
Yeah.
The Titans, obviously, we saw them.
Yeah.
Orsic Chow, he plays Dr. Ryan Choi, another man based on the comics. He was in there. Wentworth Miller played Rory's voice of his ship,
which was great. He's like, it's Leonard.
I thought it was hilarious that we got an alternate universe Rory for his ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no Gideon. We got
Leonard. Yeah. Tom Ellis.
Yeah.
Obviously, Lucifer, Brandon Ralph. We don't need to talk about that. Burt Ward, Robert Wool. Tim Burton's 89 Batman. And then, obviously, Erica Durance and Tom Welling.
Right.
And then this one here, I guess I didn't recognize, Ace the Bat-Hound.
Oh, the Burt Ward was walking.
Oh, that was Ace the Bat-Hound. I didn't realize that. Okay. And then, you know, Kevin Conroy. So that's what we've seen so far. And I love how they've handled these cameos and what they've done with them.
Yep.
And... I think it's great.
So we open up Supergirl's episode with Will Wheaton as a doomsayer.
Yep.
I took a lot of notes just to kind of like keep it straight in my head. So they find out something is coming across the galaxy and it's going to destroy Argo City, which is where, Superman and Lois are raising baby Jonathan, because on Argo, he doesn't have powers.
Yeah.
He's just a normal guy. And Jonathan's just a normal baby.
Yeah.
So, something's coming. It's about to destroy it. Kara gets a signal off of them at the last second. They send Jonathan off in a capsule, much the same way that, you know, Clark was sent off.
Exactly.
Which my thought was, if this thing is ripping across space and time and it's destroying everything in the galaxy, how's that shuttle going to get away from it? It's not like when Krypton exploded.
Right.
And even still knocked her pod off.
Right.
Of course. But whatever, you know, whatever. But we see that they don't get away. They send Jonathan and they don't get away. Oh, except for they did because...
Monitor pulled them out last minute.
Harbinger. Layla is now Harbinger.
Oh, that's right. Harbinger, not Monitor.
And she pulled those two out, but, you know, Kara's mom is dead because Erica Durance had to go and change her costume from Kara's mom to...
Which I think is cool. She played both roles.
Exactly. So she's gone. Kara's all devastated about this. You know, oh, what are we going to do? But the thing was, even though this was a Supergirl episode, we had... Oliver, we had Barry. So,
well, instead of having their individual openings with like Crisis on it, it was a universal opening for all three episodes. Yeah,
yep. Mia now has an outfit. You know, she has to have an outfit so that she can kick ass in the crossover. By the way, I'm going to say this now. We'll probably bring it up later on. People need to stop calling this Crisis. And by people, I mean the people in the fucking shows.
Oh, yeah.
Crisis is coming. Are you prepared for Crisis? What are we going to do about Crisis? Knock it off.
Yeah.
Cut it out. It was called Crisis on Infinite Earths in the comics because that was the tagline. Nobody, outside of one mention, okay, in Infinity War, nobody called it Endgame.
Right.
Nobody said, we're heading into the Endgame. What are you going to do about Endgame? This is Endgame. What's going to go on in Endgame? Nobody fucking said that.
Right.
Except for the fans, because that was the name of the movie.
Right.
This was called Crisis on Infinite Earths. Don't keep saying Crisis.
Yeah.
Anyway, so. So Oliver finds out that Barry's going to have to die. You know, Flash disappears in the Crisis. He's going to have to die.
Mm-hmm.
that's the only way that everything turns out okay. And Oliver's pissed, and he calls the monitor on it, and he's like, hey, you said that if I sacrificed, then those two would live. I specifically said that I wanted Barry and Kara to live. And the monitor's like, well, things change. You know, shit happens. And basically tells him to pound sand. He's like, it's got to happen. Yep. My powers are dwindling, and I can't see as far into the future as I used to be able to. So, sucks to be you. So now they've tracked Jonathan, you know, little baby Superman.
Yeah.
And he's in an alternate future.
Earth 16.
Yeah, in 2046. Now, my first thought was that he went through, like, he warped to Earth 16 and then had grown up and we were going to get Superboy. But then I remembered that they're actually doing a spinoff show that's going to be this Clark and this Lois raising Jonathan.
Right.
So I was like, oh, never mind. But that would have been a cool thing. You know, he's in 2046, so they go and grab him, and he's actually like...
Which they actually just did in the comics, kind of, where Jonathan, who's like 10 or 11, goes off with his grandfather. Maybe he's 9 or 10. Goes off with his grandfather, Clark's dad, who's still alive, because this is alternate world. Doesn't matter.
Oh, they are fucking with the timelines hard with the whole Doomsday Clock thing going on.
Oh, I'm not even watching that. I'm just reading straight Superman. I'm not messing with anything else. But anyhow... A few issues later, Jonathan kind of returns, but now he's like 20, or he's a teenager, 18, 19, because of some time loop he got trapped in and everything.
Gotcha.
So that's why I was like, are they doing the same thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but no. Because, like you said, I forgot about the spinoff.
Yep. So they send, you know, the Wave Rider crew off, because they're like, oh, well, we've got people that can travel in time. And each episode, they kept finding odd ways to stick different members of different
teams. Groups together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting how they did that.
I liked when White Canary there, Sarah.
Yes.
It was like, oh, but I promised the rest of the team no crossover.
No more crossovers.
No more crossovers, yeah.
yes, I love how they still poke fun at themselves, which yep. is exactly what I want Legends to be all yep. the time.
And they do it.
Yeah. We find out that the Monitor has established quantum towers on key Earths mm-hmm. to slow this spread of antimatter down.
Yep.
You know, he foresaw this and didn't put it up on every Earth? Seems weird. It's a MacGuffin.
I liked it when the Monitor announces his nemesis, the anti-Monitor, is coming. And Cisco's like, wait a second.
Cisco, like, loses his shit.
He has such a hard time, like... Did someone name this guy without me? Are we sold on this being his
right,
name?
Because the next scene, he's just like, no, seriously, guys. Like, is everybody just naming themselves now? Like, we can't really be going with anti-Monitor, can yeah. we?
I'm Pariah.
Really?
Yeah.
So they go to Lena, and they're like, look, we need your help to save the people of this Earth. The beam is coming. The antimatter is coming. We need to get people off this planet. You yep. can help us with that. And Lena's like, go fuck yourselves. And they basically just have the old Care Bear stare moment and have a heart-to-heart with her and convince her to be human. And that's what she says at the end of the day. She's like, I hate all of you, but I want to save the world. It has nothing to do with you people.
So I have a big problem with this.
Which part?
With 3 billion people being jettisoned from their Earth over to Earth 1, because we have fucking room for 3 more billion people
no.
on this planet.
Yeah.
You know, all at once. Not a gradual build, but just boom, 3 billion people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a big problem with that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of this you have to give up to comic law.
I mean, this is how they're merging. That's how, you know, Supergirl is going to live on the same Earth as Barry and... Previous Arrow, and you know what I mean? That's how they're going to merge the universes together, I guess.
Except
it.
They're not.
No?
No. No. We'll get to my theories in a little bit.
All right.
But it was cool that we got to see the Legion ship, you know, the Legion superhero ship.
Yeah.
Makes another appearance here.
But Oliver sacrificed himself to stay behind.
Yeah.
Because this is his stand, apparently, to help these people to make sure they can escape the Earth.
Except it's not, because the Monitor says, no, this isn't where you're supposed to die. And he's like, well, not everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And then he shoots the Monitor with a shock arrow.
Yeah.
And the Monitor, who can travel through realities, etc., goes, ah, and falls over, stunned by the shock arrow.
Right.
None of the Beasties attack the Monitor. Did you notice that?
I did notice it, yeah.
Yeah. But they all go in after
and then,
Oliver.
And then Oliver ran out of arrows. And then the Monitor, I guess, became unfrozen long enough to bring him to this world so everyone could say goodbye and Oliver could very unsatisfyingly die. Like,
yeah.
Very lackluster, very non-dramatic, very kind of like, oh, that's how he dies?
Yeah.
That's not real.
And even the monitor was like, this isn't how it was supposed to happen. This is not how he was supposed to die. I'll just put this out there. In the first Avengers movie, Hawkeye ran out of arrows.
Kept fighting.
He's still alive.
Kept fighting.
Yeah. Kept kicking
him
out of ass.
I mean, his career's now dead.
Yeah.
But.
And this is where Nash first shows up as Pariah.
Yeah. Where we learn that the Anti-Monitor has Nash appear wherever he can witness bad shit's about to happen.
Right.
Because he unleashed the Anti-Monitor.
Yep. He was now tricked into letting him go.
Pariah.
That's who was down there.
Yeah.
And again, they're taking elements from the comic book, Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was a mess in and of itself, and was created just to fix some of the continuity loops and the massive holes that they had in the DC universe.
Yeah.
But, you know, just pulling Pariah out of their ass. When, during the last crossover, we had Psycho Pirate. He never showed up in any of this. Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, Psycho Pirate's here. It's going to be Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then they said, Crisis on Infinite Earths is coming next year. We're all like, yeah, no fucking Psycho Pirate.
Maybe he's in the next two episodes somehow.
I doubt it. Because he was pivotal in helping the Anti-Monitor do all this shit. Like, I don't know.
Well, we see that John Cryer's alive. Lex Luthor's alive. We go to episode 2. Batwoman.
Okay. This is where it started really jumping the shark.
Oh, yeah, well, real quick. Harbinger gets Earth 74's Mick Rory and his Wave Rider. Because they need the Wave Rider.
With Leonard instead of
Gideon. Instead of Gideon, which is hilarious.
I'm like sitting there. I'm like, I know this voice. It's Leonard. And I'm like, oh, it's Snart. Yeah.
The Monitor consults the Book of Destiny and learns that there's 7 paragons. Which is the whole fucking team and some Asian guy who's a civilian who doesn't have superpowers.
Okay. And I have a huge problem with 2 of these paragons.
Yeah.
Okay. So, damn it. My monitor keeps turning off. Sarah is the paragon of destiny.
Sure.
Okay. That's fine. You know, Sarah, of all people, you know, she went down with the Queen's Gambit. She should have died. She ended up joining the League of Assassins, being reborn, essentially. And then she came back as Black Canary.
Yeah.
And then died.
And then
was reborn.
White Canary.
Yeah. And then got shuffled off to be part of the Legends. And now she's the captain of the ship. You know, she has had a massive story arc.
I'm excited about Legends.
I am too. So Destiny, I can get that. Kara is the paragon of hope.
Sure. She's always got hope.
Well, here's the thing. Barry is the paragon of love.
Just stupid.
Barry should be hope.
Yeah.
Barry is the one who is constantly giving the speeches and, like, pumping people up and saying, you got to keep going. This is what we're all about. Kara should be love because she's all about family and love
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Those two should have been switched. The only reason that they weren't was because they needed Kara to be there to deliver all those lines about, I could save this planet. I could save these people because I have hope and I'm the paragon of hope and I have to give hope. Why couldn't she have just said, I've got to love these people. I've got to give love. It was very upsetting.
Barry loves Iris.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So they say that the Paragon of Courage is the bat of the future.
Yeah.
Tell me you didn't want to see Batman Beyond.
Oh, yes.
Dude, I was so looking for, especially when we saw Old Man Bruce.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that
when Batwoman,
Luke Fox, I thought he was going to be Batman Beyond.
When Batwoman, when Kate and Kara go to Earth 99.
Yep.
Earth 96.
No, it's Earth 99.
It's Earth 96.
I have it written down as 99.
Oh, sorry. Disregard that one.
Okay.
Earth 96 is one of the Superman ones.
Yes.
Go to Earth 99,
yep.
And we see that Fox, that version of Luke Fox. I was like,
who is, my note just says, Earth 99, where, hold on. I just basically said that he is absolutely ripped.
Yeah. And then we saw Old Man Bruce.
Yeah.
Kevin Conroy's Old Man Bruce with his suit on that helps him walk and everything. I immediately thought, oh shit, Batman Beyond?
Yeah.
That was my first thought.
Because that was the thing. It was a crippled old Batman with two dogs, you know, and he couldn't do it anymore, so he took on.
And instead, we find out this Batman is fucking 1044, as we see in this book, which means crazy. He killed Superman on this world, which is how he got in this suit, and he hates everybody.
He's killed all of his villains.
Yeah,
and some heroes.
Yeah, and he's got a trophy case. Not mementos, kill trophies of everyone he's killed.
And it looks like, if I remember correctly, the glasses that were Superman's.
Yeah.
Looks like there's a hole in them, so maybe he did the old kryptonite bullet to the head.
Probably, yeah. That's what I would assume. So, and then he tries to fight, like, Kate and Kara. He tries to kill Kara.
Because she's a Kryptonian and they all have to die.
And Kate ends up kind of stopping him and accidentally knocks him over and he hits his head and dies.
No, he got electrocuted.
That's right. I was thinking of something else.
Yeah, he fell into the box of electrical power.
Yes.
And like, then basically Kate sneakily takes the kryptonite out of his suit and packs it away for herself. Cause she's like, well, you never know when you'll need this.
Yeah.
Which, fair point, you know.
But then she ends up giving it. But then they do the dumbass thing where she looks at it 20 times.
Yeah.
After Lucaro say, like, I've got to do this. And she looks at it like, I've got this kryptonite, though. And in the end, she gives the kryptonite to Kara and says, like, I trust you'll make the right decision because I don't need this.
Right. So the Paragon of Courage is the bat of the future. Well, now they come back and they're like, well, he's dead. So, you know, we can't – he can't be the Paragon of Future. And they're like, no, Kate, it's you. Yeah. This was your last trial.
That's because
the point of being the Paragon of Courage.
Apparently Sisko was busy because Ray had to make the Paragon Finder.
Yeah, this was rough, especially considering that all seven of the Paragons are from Earth 1. No,
they're not. Because
Kara and John Jones are not, but...
Right, yeah, well, but don't forget, characters. Brandon Routh was...
Kingdom Come Superman?
Kingdom Come Superman, who was also one of the Paragons. So he was not from Earth 1.
That was Earth 96?
That was Earth 96, I believe.
He was... The Paragon of Truth is a Kryptonian who has suffered a great loss.
Yeah.
So...
And that's what they also took from one of the comic story in that with Brandon Routh's Kingdom Come, where Lex Luthor gassed the building, gassed the Daily Planet, and Lois and...
Oh, in the comic, yes.
Yeah, in the comic, and killed Lois and Perry. Well, that's what he did in the TV series as well, so they took that story from the comic.
He said some Joker.
Yes, he did say some Joker, but in the comics it was, I think it was Lex. Might have been the Joker, actually.
Well, they did... Okay, so they had a video game, too, Injustice, Gods and Heroes... it was like Mortal Kombat, but for DC heroes. And the story in that one was the same kind of thing. Basically, the Joker killed a bunch of people, and Superman fucking killed him. Like, fucking nuked right through his chest. And from that point on was like, I'm above all this. I'm sick and tired of these villains. I'm going to kill. And it's the same. It's that kind of what pushes that person over the edge. What gets Superman to the point where... He turns his back and says, nope, code's out the window. I'm going to start fucking wrecking ass. Now, before we get to that part, Lila started hearing voices in her head. She's going a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And Lex Luthor is brought into the fold and, you know, Kara wants to kill him. She's smart. She's one of the smart ones. He should be killed.
Yep.
But the monitor says everyone has their role to play.
Yep.
Well, apparently Lex's first part of the role is to steal the Book of Destiny and know exactly how to use it right from the jump. Like, he knows everything.
Yep.
So he uses it to jump from world to world and kill Superman on every world.
Yep. We get the classic comic Doomsday scene of Superman dead with the rubble. And
dude, that was so cheesy. It was so green screened.
Yeah, it was.
But... It was still classic. Yep. It was iconic.
Yep, yep. And then we go to Smallville.
Oh, this was probably one of my favorite scenes of the entire arc, honestly.
We have Tom Welling, Smallville.
Chopping wood.
Yep. Clark Kent chopping some wood. And Iris and Lois Lane and Clark show up from our new series.
Yep.
And that Superman makes the comment of, like, I'd be doing that with one hand. You know, like.
Yeah.
And Clark has got a sweat on, and he's working and everything, and he just starts talking to them, and then Lex Luthor's coming to kill you. I didn't know the president was in town. And then they disappear, and he turns around, there's Lex with a book open. He's like, I'm here to kill you. And he goes, you're not Lex. Yes, I am. No, you're not. And he takes out, I love he takes the kryptonite out and throws it to him, and he catches it, looks at it, just throws it.
Yeah.
Well, how did you do that? Huh? I gave up my powers or something like that.
Yeah. He's like, that should have killed you. And he goes, well, it would if I hadn't given up my powers. Yeah. Why would you do that? You had the powers of a god. What could possibly make you? And then you hear
breaks
his kids.
A toy. So he steps on a toy and breaks. Right. He looks down and goes, you're kidding me. Nope. Greatest decision I ever made. Then you hear the kids. I love it when he goes to punch him and Clark grabs his hand and punches him and drops. He goes, huh, still stronger.
It was just so perfect because that was, you know, they did that in Richard Donner's second Superman film, you know, where he gave up his powers to be with Lois. And
he went back and got him at the end.
He did, yeah. But it's the same, you know, again, it's another one of those options that is always on the table. Like, what if Superman said, I'm done with this. I just want to be a human.
And then John Cryer's Lex is like, well, I'm just going to leave you then because there's no fun.
You took all the fun out of it. Yeah.
And he leaves him. And then you see Erica Durance comes out as Lois. Hey, Clark, what are you doing?
She calls him Smallville.
Yeah, hey, Smallville. Some Lex from an alternate universe just showed up trying to kill me, but I don't have my powers, so he left. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. And apparently they have two daughters.
Yep.
Because she says the girls are, you know, holding her hostage or something like that.
I was very satisfied with that finish.
Like, I was hugely satisfied. Like I said, it was probably my favorite thing, other than like, Sarah Lance. And
it would have been cool to see him in the Superman outfit one time.
Right.
Would have been badass, I think. But to see the closure that we got from Smallville finally, that we didn't get when Smallville ended.
And what's really cool is that Tom Welling has become pretty buff since then.
Yeah.
He was always a well-built guy, but he was smaller. And now, and that was part of the issue, was that he wouldn't have fit comfortably in the suit. They would have had to pad it. So now he could fill it out well, but that lends it to the whole, you know, he's a working man now, you know, he's on the farm, he's cutting wood, he's doing physical labor. So as a human, his body would become more jacked like that. So I really liked that.
I was very pleased with that.
I was as well. Yeah,
it was a great for us to, like, because they kind of nodded to it last year when they did the music and they're on the farm again with our versions of Lois and Clark.
Right.
And now we got this. So I was pretty happy with that.
So Iris has decided, wait a minute, if there's a Book of Destiny out there, then maybe we can use that to fix this and Barry won't have to die.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the monitor's wrong.
Right.
Because, you know, they're always looking for that loophole.
Yep.
And that was Earth 167, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Constantine has found them an Earth that has a
functioning bastard. Why was it called Earth 167, I wonder?
I don't know. Maybe that was the number of episodes that Smallville had?
I was just going to look that up.
So Constantine helped them find an Earth that still has a functioning Lazarus pit that hasn't been destroyed so that they could bring Oliver back. And, you know, Sarah talks about it. She's like, he's not going to come back, right? Because he's still going to get his soul. And
217.
Oh, okay.
But it was a kick-ass cameo of Lucifer in this. How they found the Lazarus pit.
No, that wasn't it. Lucifer got them into purgatory.
Oh, shit. That's right. That's right. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Earth 18 is where the Lazarus pit is. It's in Dakota.
Yeah.
And Sarah crosses knives with Jonah Hex.
Yes.
Carves his face up. She goes, don't worry. You were supposed to have this scar anyway.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. So they bring Oliver back and he does the, you know, the same thing Sarah did, which is a, you know, Tasmanian devil bullshit.
Yep.
But they put him down pretty quickly.
Yep. They dart him basically. I can't think of them. Sedate him.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Earth 96,
we meet Brandon Routh, who's the editor of the Daily Planet.
Got some gray in the temples.
Yeah, got some gray on the temples. Fucking jacked and big.
And it was so cool, him meeting Tyler Hoechlin's Superman.
Yes.
And, like, the two of them kind of fanboying on each other.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that once. Oh, yeah. Like, it was great.
But basically, they're like, hey, Lex Luthor's coming to kill you. Not your Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor from Alternate Universe. Hey, let's go in my office.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's just kind of cool about it. Because basically, he's tragic.
Yeah.
Like, he lost Lois, he lost Perry, he lost Jimmy, he lost
everybody.
Everybody.
Yep.
And so he still remains, you know, Superman. He still hasn't gone over to the dark side yet.
And John Cryer's Lex Luthor is able to do a spell from the Book of Destiny to make Superman's hatred that he has against Dalhoshan Superman.
Yep.
And we get a Superman fight in the sky, which was cool.
They did a really good job of that. Yes, they did.
And then, of course, they appealed to Superman's humanity.
Which doesn't really work. Until they club Lex Luthor. And then they knock Lex Luthor out,
and all of a sudden, oh, hey, he's working just fine now. He's okay.
Yeah. Because they get a hold of the Book of Destiny, and they're like, how do we do this?
And then they go back to Earth 1, and they got Lex Luthor in jail now, and this and that. And the Monitor's like, see, even Lex played his part. He led you to the Superman.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
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 Good thing Lex tore that page out of the Book of Destiny, didn't he?
Yeah.
That pissed me off.
We'll get there.
But we get Brandon Routh as Superman, and we get Brandon Routh as Ray doing scenes together. It's hilarious.
And Ray was fanboying. He's like, yes. Oh my God, this is such a cool Superman. Tyler Hoechlin's like, I'm Superman. He's like, yeah, but look at this guy.
And then, like, so, like, Ray, what? Ray, you got really big. When'd you get so jacked, Ray? I can't remember who that was.
Oh, yeah. Barry?
Cisco or Barry, one of them. Jeez, Ray, you got real big. You look great. I don't know who that is.
And then, what is this? I put some of these notes. I'm trying to remember what they were.
Right, but like, that's kind of the end of that one.
Yeah, we did find out that that Superman has a son named Jason.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
And John lost his mojo thanks to the antimatter.
Mm-hmm. And then we see the anti-monitor. Harbinger is approached by the anti-monitor at the end of that episode.
Summoned. She is summoned by the anti-monitor. And,
And then we get to Flash.
We have Earth 203 with Huntress and Oracle.
Yep.
Which, again, was very tragic.
Yes, it was.
I loved that when Ralph showed up and he said something. I can't remember what it was. And they were like, ignore him. It's his first crossover.
Yes. Yeah.
They're keeping it alive. And then all of a sudden, the Paragon detector just goes nuts. And it's like, oh, and here's everybody. Oh, Honor, that's John Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, Love, that's Barry.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah.
And
then Ryan Choi is humanity. And he happens to be on Earth 1.
Conveniently enough. Yep. In Ivytown.
Yeah.
So they managed to recruit him. I don't care about that story otherwise.
What I thought was very interesting was that the Monitor, who's losing all of his power and becoming weaker and weaker, was just like, Vibe must live again.
Oh, yes.
And then gives
Cisco back his powers.
Not just his powers, but the suit, which was kind of weird. Like, why did he do the suit? But I'm glad. I missed Vibe. I like Cisco's powers. I liked his ability. You know, they still use his powers all the time with those little discs that let them teleport.
Yes. But what they had to do... So I would rather... This is my favorite point of the episode.
Okay.
Of the three episodes, this is my favorite part.
Okay.
Where they go and they are able to Vibe with his powers, able to see how Nash opened the vault that let loose the anti-monitor, and they go in.
Because Pariah can't speak about it. He can't do anything against the anti-monitor.
However, he can see his memories.
Yep.
They open the vault, they go in, and they see, like, this treadmill that a speedster's running on. And they're able to see that it's Barry Allen from Earth 90. So it's John Wesley Shipp as Barry Allen from Earth 90, who we saw a quick glimpse of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got zapped away after he said, you destroyed my Earth and you're not going to destroy, you know, like you destroyed mine.
Yep.
So he is powering this magnetic thing that is causing this.
It's an antimatter cannon.
Thank you. That's causing it.
Yep.
And so they figure out a way to get him off it. Where
they Vibe him out.
He opens a portal on the treadmill, opens a portal outside of it, and boom, they Vibe him out.
Yep.
And he's like, thank you for the reprieve, but I need to get back on there because if I don't get back on there, it's going to cause a catastrophic failure. And
the anti-monitor set it up so that basically if I stop...
It's a failsafe.
Yep. It will explode.
So essentially the headline the whole time is, so Barry Allen's like, well, I'll go in there and do it. This is why I go missing in the crisis because I need to keep this thing running so we can solve it. And they discover, oh, if we reverse it, maybe it'll shut it down and this and that. They discover all that, whatever. So Barry Allen, our Barry, is going to get on there. But what John wants to ship Barry, Earth 90 Barry, is like, no, I've lived my life. Everyone I love is gone. Everyone you love is still here. I'm going to go back on there. And, of course, Barry being Barry is like, no, I'm going to do it.
Oh, and don't forget, in the meantime,
yes,
the antimatter cannon is overloading.
Yes.
you know, we've got this whole thing going on in Purgatory, which we'll get to in a minute. But the antimatter cannon is overloading. So electricity is arcing everywhere. So Pariah
brings Black Lightning
to channel the electricity.
Yes. So Black Lightning shows up.
Yep.
We get a little fight with him at first, but then Jefferson.
Yeah.
And his Earth is gone.
Yeah.
They established that his Earth is wiped out.
Now, here's the thing. Here's what kills this for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's where I can't suspend disbelief anymore.
Yeah.
Black Lightning has not been canceled. It's still going strong.
Yeah, I know.
So his Earth is coming back. It's not that he is going to live here.
Right.
Because they made it a point of saying that his wife, his kids, his world
is gone.
Is gone.
Right.
It's got to come back.
Somehow. Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that Kara's world is going to come back.
But somehow it doesn't.
Multiple worlds are
going to come back. Somehow it doesn't, because they've already said that Kara's going to now be on the same world.
We'll see.
So.
We'll see.
But so
with an extra 3 billion people.
So Black Lightning harnesses the power of this cannon to prevent it from overloading.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool. I like how they brought him on.
My other note in there was Kara needs to relax.
Yeah, she does.
She's just going off, but I need to save these people. I need to use that Book of Destiny, and I need to do this, and I need to save these people. Yeah.
So Earth 90 Barry takes Barry's Speed Force. And
yep.
He goes, yeah, that's a little trick I learned. You'll learn it too. Oh, I love it when both Barry's going to speed time. So they
yes.
talk to each other.
Yes.
While, you know.
Yep. That was perfect.
I don't know. I love the original Flash series. So to see, like, John Wilson's ship, not just on the show, but as that actual Flash in that costume.
Aged because he's been running for so long.
Yes, aged as well and whatnot. It was just so cool. And he's just like, it's my time.
Yep.
This is my time. I'm the Barry Allen that dies to save this
yep.
crisis, if you will. And, of course, like, he wants him to, Barry's like, don't vibe that Barry back in, Cisco. And Cisco's like, eh, shut up, Barry.
Yeah.
So they vibe Barry, Earth 90 Barry in there, and he starts running the opposite way now, reversing the polarity or whatever you want to fucking call it.
Yeah.
And then we get a clip of a footage from the original Flash 1990 TV series.
Yeah.
Look how young John Wesley Shipp looked in that.
I know.
That was so badass.
Yeah.
He looks so young. And then he burns up, if you will. He runs and runs and runs until the everything burns up. And he stops the cannon.
Yep. And he, yeah, becomes one with the Speed Force.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta say, I mean, they've managed to give me two satisfying endings. I'm sad that he died, if you will.
Yep.
But it's better than the ending we got, you know, 19 years ago. Well, shit, 29 years ago. Holy crap. That long ago. So, yeah, I was very happy with that.
That's all you got?
Yeah, I keep going.
Okay. So, meanwhile, Constantine makes a deal with Lucifer, gets a devil card from him, which this was 5 years before. Oh, it was fucking cool. And originally, when they said that he would not, Tom Ellis was like, no, I won't be in the crossover. He wasn't. They wrote him in later on because they were like, you know, you're right here. We could just do this. And like I said, the creator of Lucifer said, yeah, that was all them. Like, they did all the dialogue. We had nothing to do with it here at the show. And, you know, kudos to them. But this took place 5 years before we got the premiere episode of Lucifer. So this was when he was still debaucherous, before he'd met anybody, before he decided to turn over a new leaf. This was Lucifer on vacation being a fuckwad.
Yep.
And he hints that he owes John for something to do with Mazikeen.
Yep.
He says, I still owe you for Maze. So he gives him a card, a tarot card of the devil, and says that that'll get him into purgatory. But it's going to start fading out. When it fades out all the way, the door closes. You're done. So they go to purgatory to get Oliver's soul. And it's on, you know, his purgatory, of course, looks like Lian Yu because they've got to keep reusing sets.
Makes sense.
But, you know, that is where Oliver spent his formative years.
Right.
And basically, he fights them because he doesn't recognize them. Then they beat him into submission. And he goes, okay, I'm ready to go back with you. And then suddenly, you know, Spectre shows up.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey, I've got a bigger role for him. And Oliver's like, I got to stay with him, guys.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? Like, this guy just shows up out of nowhere. You don't know him. And he's just like, yeah, I'm going to stay with him.
Yeah.
No. And what are they going to do now? His body's still back there being all, you know.
Right. Yeah. They haven't addressed that.
No.
But he stays there to become like a Spectre himself.
Yeah. Because basically Spectre was an all-powerful creature.
Yeah.
Life and death, you know, announced that the anti-monitor was not dead, and he went back to the beginning of time, and he was going to undo reality from there, so set up the final battle. Anyway, that was very confusing to me.
It was a little bit, yep.
You know, that this character who's never been established in any of the shows just suddenly shows up in Purgatory and is like, nope, I got more bigger plans for Oliver, and Oliver's like, okay, I'm going with him, guys. Stop. Oliver never would do that. Oliver doesn't act like that. He would be like, no, you get away from me.
Yeah.
I'm going to get back to my body.
I'm going back to my daughter.
Exactly. Pariah sent the Paragons away to the Vanishing Point.
Yep. Because the Anity Monitor showed up and, like, the wave started again.
Yep. And there was a little bit of a showdown. And he basically, like, Pariah sent the seven Paragons forward to the Vanishing Point because they need to save the world. And everybody else got disintegrated.
Yep.
And including the Monitor. He's gone.
Yep.
So they're all stuck in the Vanishing Point. And we're like, okay, you know, here's where it's going to pick up. Here's where we're going to... Nope. Because we still got one little twist left.
Oh, yeah. Kingdom Come Superman's going to start having, like, a seizure.
And he's got red beams coming out of him. And suddenly he just disintegrates, like, in antimatter.
But transforms into Lex Luthor.
Who reaches into his jacket and pulls out a page from the Book of Destiny that showed the seven symbols of the seven Paragons. Except for the one for Superman... Somebody took a pencil
and wrote Lex
and crossed it out and then wrote in Lex Luthor.
Yep.
I have never had a bigger problem with these shows
than
this moment right here.
That pissed me off. That was dumb.
That was dumb?
Beyond.
That was Lex being stupid. Like, that was farcical. That wasn't even like, you know, ooh, Lex is an evil genius. That was like slapstick.
Yeah.
And didn't it piss me off? Jesus. Like, what a sour note to end such a somber occasion. We've got seven Paragons. All that's left in reality, because all of reality has been destroyed. These are the seven that are left. And now we've got fucking Lex Luthor pulling that Bugs Bunny shit.
Yep.
Oh, piss me off.
So we have like a month, less than a month now, but we have a couple weeks. 3 weeks until the series comes back and finishes up.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, they got two episodes.
I gotta say, you know, I've really enjoyed it for the most part.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
A few red flags for me, but for the most part, I've really enjoyed it.
Yep. Same here.
Mandalorian. Chapter 7: The Reckoning.
Now, this was the first episode that I felt like A was a to be continued.
Yes.
And B was overall a downer.
Yeah.
Like, there's been some dark stuff in all the episodes, but this one was, like, a downer.
Yeah, basically the Mandalorian gets a message from Greef Karga, Carl Weathers' character.
Yep.
And basically, Karga's like, hey, my town's been overrun by Imperial troopers.
Looking for that baby that you took.
Yeah, they're looking for that, you know, that asset that you took. So why don't you come back, and you can kill the client. And you can have the child and leave, but because if the client's gone, the rest will just fall to the wayside.
Right.
And reluctantly, the Mandalorian's like, I don't really feel like I have a choice. Otherwise, I'm just going to be running forever.
Right.
So he goes and swoops down and he picks up Gina Carano, you know, Cara Dune. And then he goes.
Great
and,
to see her back again.
Yeah, it is. And then he goes and gets Quill.
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 Yeah. Because he keeps calling him Ugnaught, which is his race. And then he's like, my name is Quill.
He picks up Quill to help him, who has IG-11 reprogrammed.
And I really appreciated the time that they put into showing the rehabilitation.
They really did show, like, the development of it being reprogrammed on even just picking up that cup over and over and over and over and over again to finally getting it right. So that was cool.
It was awesome.
So they're all going to go and head to meet up with Karga, which they do.
Yep.
And he gets, they're at the campfire one night, and they start getting attacked by some sort of creatures.
Could have been Rax, could have been Minox.
Yeah, don't but know what flying was. Creatures with sharp nails and this and that and everything. And Karga gets, his arm gets infected with the poison.
Yep.
Because he got bit by something, by one of them, or scratched.
Yep.
I think bit, doesn't matter. Gets infected with poison. And the child, because they just call it the child, not Baby Yoda.
Correct.
Uses the Force to heal Karga.
Yep.
Which is the first time we've ever seen that, but certainly not the last. But it established that that's the ability someone who has very powerful touch with the Force can do, apparently.
Yep.
But the child saving Karga's life causes Karga to change his mind about what he was doing, which was he was setting the Mandalorian up.
Which we all knew.
Setting you up to die. And so he kills the other two guys that are with him and says, all right, this is the plan. Now, I was here to turn on you and turn you in, but I changed my mind because that kid saved me and that kid's special and definitely shouldn't be going to the client.
Right.
So we're still going to go in there and kill the client, but got to have a new plan to do this. So essentially the old, I'm bringing the prisoner in, the kid's safe over here.
Right.
You know.
Now, let's not forget that before this, when they were headed to the planet,
yeah,
and they were on the ship, the kid kind of went a little dark side. They were doing an arm wrestling match between Kara and the Mandalorian,
yes, yes,
and they were both struggling, and the kid didn't like that, thought that she was hurting the Mandalorian.
Yes, that's right.
And force choked the shit out of her.
Yeah.
Like, she was...
Yeah.
And that's the Mandalorian right. had to tell him to stop. And,
hey, no, that's my friend.
Yeah.
And the kid stopped. Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. But, so people were like, is he going evil? No, he's a kid.
He's a kid who saw
you're hurting
friend.
My daddy.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So they get to town, and this is, I'm like, okay, they're running out of time.
Yeah.
So.
It's still, this episode felt like it could have been a movie. It was long.
Well, that's the point of it. The point of these episodes is to make it feel like you're watching a Star Wars movie,
yep,
with the look and the feel and the storytelling. So that way it's not, doesn't just look like, oh, this is a lower budget version.
Right.
It wants it to look like.
It's not Wookiee Life Day.
Right. So they meet up with the client, and the client gets a call from Moff Gideon.
It's
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah?
He's like, I got to take this.
Yeah. And Death Troopers surround the building, and they just lay waste to the building, killing the client and the other stormtroopers inside.
Yep.
And now, basically, we're kind of left with... and the scout troopers go off to go in for Queel because they copy Mandalorian telling him, get to the ship. We're trapped. And...
Yeah, they had originally sent Queel with the baby on one of his beasts.
Yeah, back to the ship.
And he was just kind of sauntering along because he's not in a rush. He knows these guys can handle it, but he didn't realize that there were going to be Death Troopers, that there was going to be an entire Imperial regiment here.
Right, yeah.
And so then when he hears that, he starts galloping, and two scout troopers took off on there because they intercepted
the message, yeah.
And they took off after him, and we saw a very intense, like... back and forth chase. It kept going back and forth between, you know,
yes,
him running, the speeder bikes way out in the desert,
yeah,
the Mandalorian kind of buckled down with everybody else.
Well, the Mandalorian, Carl Weathers, and Gina Carano, they're all trapped,
mm-hmm,
in this pub by themselves with a whole squadron or platoon of Death Troopers surrounding them.
Yep.
They're basically jolly well fucked.
Yes, they are.
And then you have the last scene you see in the episode is as the camera pans across, is like you see the speeders heading off in the distance, kind of. But you see, like, the dead beast on the ground and then the dead Queel on the ground with the Mandalorian's voice going, Queel! Queel! And then, boom. Oh, yeah, that was big.
Yeah. So, basically, the scout troopers have the baby. Our heroes are pinned down. Moff is there.
We've got one episode.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, it almost pisses me off that the show was on last Wednesday because it extends how much longer we have to wait to get to the next episode.
I know.
I mean, I realize it's only in like 4 days, but whew. And it's directed by Taiki Waititi.
Awesome.
Yeah. And of course, it's written by Jon Favreau, who, genius, this man.
Yes. That was one of the trailers that we saw, which we had already seen, which was Free Guy.
Oh, that's right. We saw Free Guy trailer.
When you said Taika Waititi, I remember that he's in that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love The Mandalorian.
I do, too.
I think it's phenomenal. I'm really happy with the show.
Yep. Do you want to segue from that into
Rise of Skywalker? Seems like natural. Rise of Skywalker.
So, you've had some time to sit with this, mm-hmm. as have I.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it Friday night.
Yep.
It's now Monday evening.
Yep.
So, we've had a few days to process it. I had a good discussion with my buddy Sam. We got into some, you know, particulars of it. My stance on it is this. I liked this movie a lot. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of problems with it. And I think they all stem from one major problem.
What's that major problem?
Nope. I want to hear your...
I've talked to a few people about this as well. And I have yet to talk to anyone that walked away with a negative feeling. Anyone I've talked to or conversed about it online with that I have all like said, I like the movie and this is why I like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
People that I saw that were shitting on the movie or just like had one line comments as to why. So why do you hate it so much? It was garbage. And then you get the canned, well, they basically said everything happened in part eight just didn't matter. And I guess I don't understand. Sometimes I have to explain how they did that because I didn't pick up on that personally. I enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. My biggest complaint is that this is the quote-unquote the end.
Yep.
Well,
my buddy Sam was one of those people who didn't leave with a good taste in his mouth, okay. But he also did not have a one-word response. Like I said, we probably talked on the phone for an hour and a half about different issues. One thing that I think I can speak to is what you were just saying about how it undoes episode 8.
Yeah.
So the big things that it undid were in episode 8, Rey was told her parents were nothing. They were junkers. They came from nothing. They were nothing.
Okay, yeah, by Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Which to me, that's psychological warfare.
Right. She also went into that cave and said that she wanted to see her parents, and we just saw her stretched out in infinite directions.
Yep.
You know? So that was one thing that people felt was undone.
And
I agree with you completely.
To me, that's the dark side telling her, we're not going to tell you who you are.
Right. Yeah.
Because Palpatine is the leader of the dark side.
Yeah. And,
it's the dark side cave.
When Luke went into his dark side cave, you know, he saw Vader, and when he cut his head off, it was his face in there.
Right.
And it stopped the movie in its tracks. But anyway, another thing that they felt was undone was Luke.
Yeah.
Because in The Last Jedi, Luke was a crotchety fuck of an old man.
Yeah.
You know? He was trying to isolate himself. He was trying to stay away. He didn't want to be a Jedi. He didn't want to be a master. And now, when we see his ghost in this one, he's at peace, and he's like...
Oh, that's because he became one with the Force, and he became enlightened.
And that's what I said as well. I'm like, this wasn't an undoing.
I don't see the undoing. The only undoing I sort of see is at the end of part 8, they had the little kid show that he had Force sensitivity.
Yep. With the broomstick.
With the broomstick. But others in this movie they showed had Force sensitivity, like Finn. So, yeah, I don't see the undoing from episode 8 to this one.
I really don't. I think it's a lame thing. However, that argument on its face gets to the point that I was making of the big issue through all of this.
Which is?
You had 3 movies by 2 directors.
Yeah.
Basically, they said, J.J. Abrams, we want you to make the next Star Wars trilogy. He made episode 7.
Yep.
And then they pulled him. And they said, put Rian Johnson in there.
Yep.
So J.J. Abrams went into this with a plan for 3 movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he laid it all out in the first movie and then didn't get to do the next one. So Rian Johnson came in and said, well, I'm going to build on what you had, and here we go. Here's what we're doing. And he ran with it in his own way.
Right.
Then they said, you're out, Abrams, you're back in. So Abrams went into this, and you can't tell me he didn't. He went into this and said, I need to finish telling my story.
And I agree with that.
So you had, again, when George Lucas did the 6 movies that he did, they were his movies. Like them, hate them, love them, whatever. Yeah. They were his movies all throughout it. Right. He didn't hand it off to somebody else midway through.
Right.
And say, run with this. The side stories, you know, the Rogue Ones, the Solos, those were all other people.
Right.
And they could be, because they just kind of tied in. But you were talking, imagine if somebody was writing a book Stephen King's writing a book, okay?
Yeah.
And he gets done the first third of it and then hands it over to somebody else to write the middle of it and then writes the end based on whatever they wrote in there.
Right.
Like, that sounds like a party game.
Yeah.
It sounds like Telephone or something like that, you know, where it's like, okay, I'm going to write this. Now you pick up the story. It's an improv game. That's what it is. It's improv. So I think that's where the heart of the problem is that J.J. Abrams came back in to the director's shoes and said, I need to finish telling my story. And so a lot of things didn't gel as well as they could have if one person had been running all three of them. If you had had one person from start to finish, I think it would have been a lot smoother.
I can agree with that.
So I think whenever you look at one of the problems, like in this movie, that's what is going to be at the heart of it, I think. Some of them were just weird, but, you know, that's where a lot of this came from. And so I can kind of forgive that because that was beyond any one person. Granted, Abrams could have come into the ninth movie and said, you know what? I had a vision. I'm going to go with what Rian Johnson did because he just made the last movie, and I'm going to continue from there. I don't think he did.
Well, but I don't think you can even do that either because, like you said, J.J. Abrams had a story in his mind he wanted to tell.
Right.
He wasn't able to tell part two of it, if you will. Now he can tell part three, so he probably did kind of...
He squished in part two of what he wanted.
Kind
of,
yeah.
And you know what you never heard in any of this? Was either one of them saying, yeah, I consulted with.
Right.
Rian Johnson never said, oh, I went to J.J. Abrams and we talked about where he wanted. Nope. This is what I'm doing. I am Star Wars now.
Of these three movies,
yep.
Part 8 is actually the one I have the biggest issue with. And it's one particular scene.
What's that?
It's the scene when all the little ships are heading off to the planet and the big fucking mothership's floating away and the Death Star, for the lack of a better term, whatever. I can't, the Star Destroyer, whatever it is, starts blasting the little ships and exploding them. And it takes fucking forever for her to go, I'm going to do something about this. That is my biggest bitch about all three of the movies, is that scene.
Fair enough.
Is because, like, why'd she wait so long?
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
Right.
It's like when you're watching a pro wrestling match, and it's a tag team contest, and the one guy is going to go tag his partner, but he's not supposed to tag his partner right now, but the guy that's supposed to stop him from making the tag is taking way too long to get there.
Yeah.
And so the guy on the outside is kind of slowly pulling his arm back, like, oh, you can't reach me.
Yeah.
And it just looks dumb.
Yeah. You can tell that they're stalling.
Yeah. And it doesn't look good. That's to me, you know, what that part, that scene was when she's just like, oh shit, I should do something about this. Like, turn around and attack that ship because I'm supposed to be drawing their fire and I can't now because they're not shooting at me. So I should do something about this.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to wait for half the fleet to get destroyed, then go. That's my biggest problem with all three of these movies. No, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was good.
I don't think we need to do a scene-by-scene break.
No. I enjoyed the story. At any point, okay, so near the end, you know, where we have the scene where basically they kind of tease that Rey's going to go evil and Kylo Ren's going to go good.
Yep.
I thought that's what was going to happen.
Yep.
I thought...
I had full faith in Rey.
I know it's fictional. I thought that Kylo Ren was going to go become Ben... And which he did. And I thought Rey was going to go evil. And then they were going to now do the dance again, except Ben's trying to pull Rey to the light. And then he succeeds to do that. That's what I thought was going to happen. I was shocked, amazed, thrilled, and in love with the Harrison Ford cameo that I did not expect.
Literally the best part of the movie.
Dude,
everything that came from it.
I tried to reach over to nudge you, and I said, I think I punched your cup, because I was so excited.
It was phenomenal.
Oh, my, that was...
Not only was it phenomenal to see the two of them there talking, and basically echoing the lines that they had from the first one.
Yes.
Which, again, J.J. Abrams, you know? Echoing those lines, but then, you know, for Kylo to look at him and be like, Dad, and Han just goes, I know. It was so perfect.
Yes.
It was. Even to the point where many scenes later, when we got the fucking coolest lightsaber handoff in the history of lightsaber handoffs. When she put that saber behind her head, and then he reached and pulled it out, and he did that little shrug that was a Harrison Ford shrug.
Oh,
that
yes.
was Han Solo going, huh?
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, you're fucked. Like,
that
I
was
saw
badass.
Him do that, and
that
I was like,
was so badass.
That is fucking Han Solo right there. That is a Solo. That was a Solo move. Okay, that was phenomenal.
I did read someone comment like Adam Driver's acting was so good in this movie that it didn't deserve it or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Adam Driver was great in this movie. He was less of the, I think in part
the whiny emo kid.
Yes, which he was in part eight so much, and he wasn't in this one as much. Yep. He was more that the tortured kid who's trying to live up to this legacy, and he's torn. He's literally torn inside.
Oh, dude. If ever he was a whiny emo kid, it was in episode 7. He had the little fit where he pitched it, and he's like, nah, and even the stormtroopers turned around and walked away. They're like, oh, I don't want to fuck with that.
But I thought this was great. That fucking lightsaber handoff, though.
That was beautiful. So
I really liked how they established in the first one and in the second one, now in the third one, the force connectivity that Rey and Ren had.
Thank you.
So they did establish that in all three, and it grew with each movie, which makes sense as to why they can interact with each other through the Force and take things from each other. And it's done accidentally at first, like her, like him grabbing the necklace and being like, oh, shit. And then her knocking the Vader mask into where he was so he knows where she is. But then when they did it on purpose at the end.
Mm-hmm. Which they did in episode 8 as well.
Chills right now.
You know, they reached out to each other
in
episode 8. But that gets to a point that Sam and I conflicted on. So Sam said that in his theater, when he was watching it the first time, the scene when he brings her back and they kiss for the first time, he said everyone in the theater laughed at that. And I said, why? And he goes, it was ridiculous. They didn't earn that. It was so stupid. You know, why are they suddenly kissing? And I said, okay, first off, we're talking history of Star Wars here.
Yeah.
The kiss between Luke and Leia was not earned.
Nope.
Like, we never saw enough of them on screen to warrant the fact that she would muckle onto him like that.
Then we find out they're brother and sister.
Yeah.
Gross.
Han and Leia wasn't earned.
Yeah.
You know, these are just people who were in proximity to each other, maybe had some, like, lingering sexual chemistry, you know?
Yeah.
But there was no building. I said, if anything, these two characters, Kylo and Rey, have grown together since episode 7.
Yes.
Like, from the moment he started torturing her and reaching into her head, and then they established that they could actually sense each other and talk to each other through the Force. Then they could actually see each other in episode 8.
Yes.
And they had interactions, and they grew, and he's like, take my hand, and she's like, I don't want to.
And he never wanted to kill her.
Right.
He wanted her. He wanted to be with her. She never wanted to kill him, but she wanted to take Ben's hand.
Yep. So these two growing together as two awesome, amazing.
Yes.
So I felt that the kiss was absolutely not only warranted, but beautiful.
Yes.
It was awesome. It was deserved. And then my friend Sam, and I still, if you're listening to this, Sam, bad Sam. This was his joke. The guy kisses her, makes her feel all these feelings, and then quite literally ghosts her. In the most literal sense, he ghosted her. And I said, bad Sam. That was bad.
That was awesome. Sam's got kids, I take it?
Nope.
Nah, that's too bad.
Nope.
That's an A number one plus dad joke right there.
He kissed her and then peaced out, just gone.
I did read that J.J. Abrams stated that the thing that Finn was trying to tell Rey was that he was Force-sensitive.
Yes, not that he loved her.
Right.
He was Force-sensitive,
You know, we didn't see Leia a lot in this, but
They were using footage that had been shot in The Last Jedi.
They did the best they could. You know, we got that kind of cool scene, like, because they never really, they kind of see, and this is the thing, this is like, I really wish we would have seen the footage, if you will, or gotten the more of the history of Leia becoming a Jedi or trained to be a Jedi.
Yeah, we got the cool CGI faces.
Well, no. What I mean is, in part 7 or at the beginning of part 8. Not like in part 8 where she gets fucking jettisoned into space and then uses the force to pull herself back, because it's like, oh, Leia's got the force now? When was that established?
Well, she always did.
But
they established that in Jedi.
Did they?
Yeah. Right at the very end there. When he was talking to her and he was like, and she's like, I'm your sister. I've always known. And even on in Empire, when Luke takes off and Ben's like, you know, that boy was our last hope. And Yoda's like, no, there is another.
Oh, I guess I just must have, I don't know.
Yeah, it's always been established that Leia has the Force. Just she never practiced with it like Luke did.
Okay, fair enough. All right, now I sound stupid, but
no,
whatever.
No.
Fair enough. I when I think of Leia, I don't think of her as having the Force.
Right.
Or of being a Jedi or whatever. I don't think of that at all. But, no, I'm glad we got the little training montage. She gave up her lightsaber, she gave up her lightsaber because she saw her son's death.
Yep.
I kind of like what they did with her character the best they could.
Yeah.
You know, she...
Except I thought it was a little... weak how she went out. Like, she went in and laid down, and they were like, she's going to use the last of her strength to reach out to Ben.
Right.
That seemed like a bit of a stretch. I get that they were like, look, guys, we're out of footage.
She's dead.
We've got nothing else we can do. So I get that. It felt kind of weak after seeing Luke essentially do way more than that in the same way in episode 8. You know, projecting himself across the galaxy
and all then she having did a is fight go, with Kylo.
Yeah.
And bang.
Didn't even appear to him.
What?
Yeah. And then got stabbed in
him. Yeah. And then Rey used her force, gave him part of her force to bring him back. And then we get that fucking badass, awesome scene with Han Solo. Kanan asked me afterwards, like, why wasn't Han all blue? I go, because he's not part of the force. He was not a Jedi who was now one with the force.
This was just a memory that Kylo had.
And it's just like, oh, well, but so was he a ghost? Well, was he a ghost? Was he a projection of Ben? I don't know. But
didn't matter.
It didn't matter. It was this awesome scene.
You know? For Kylo to once again say, you know, I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I'm strong enough to.
Yeah.
And this time he threw the saber. Which is what he should have done in the beginning.
Right.
Oh, that was great.
And then he shows up. That was great.
Especially considering they kept it a secret. That's the best part.
Yes.
You know? We didn't know going into this that Harrison Ford was in
it. No. We knew Mark Hamill was back in it. We knew that Lando Calrissian was going to be in it.
Oh, we saw him in the trailers like 5,000 times.
R2-D2, C-3PO, they're all going to be in it. It was awesome. They did a great job with all that, in my opinion. Fucking Harrison Ford as Han Solo. I'm so glad he agreed to do that cameo. If Carrie Fisher had not died, would we have gotten Harrison Ford back, I wonder?
My sister said the same thing. She's like, it probably took the act of Carrie Fisher dying to convince him to come back.
Yeah. But we got that. Oh, that was so good.
It was phenomenal.
Dad? I know.
Now, you mentioned it a second ago. Can we talk about how this was probably the coolest we have ever seen C-3PO?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
This was awesome.
And the comedy in this movie was great. It wasn't excessive. It fit. It was really good. Poe and Finn together, I want to see them. I want to see more of them together.
Oh, yes.
They're like odd couple, buddy movie, whatever you want to call it.
Some people were like, you know, oh, they need to have a romantic relationship. No, they don't.
No, they don't. No.
You know, and that's not being homophobic. That's saying they have amazing chemistry as they are. The two of them just growing out like that. Like, when they're about to get executed.
Yeah.
And he's like, so what are we going to tell Ray? Are we really back on this? What, are you busy right now? You got something else to do? And he's like, look, it's not important. Like, they had such great banter back and forth. Just because two people get along or have good chemistry does not mean they have to be in a relationship. People need to realize that and shut the fuck up about all this fandom and shipping. And anyway. But yes, Anthony Daniels as C-3PO was awesome.
Yes.
It was some of his best humor. It was some of his best lines.
Yeah.
You didn't ask, but I'm okay, sir.
Yeah. Who was the Burkram what? The little guy?
Burkram Fart or something.
Oh, my
God.
It was hilarious.
He was awesome. Because at first I thought he was just speaking nonsense, like it was an alien language.
Yeah.
But then he actually was like, an droid brain, go, poo-poo.
Yeah. Yeah. Hello, Rob C-3PO, and who are you? I'm Barkram.
He's my oldest friend.
So we got on that Earth with Barkram and everything. We got, what's her name?
Just call her Felicity.
Zori Blee, Bliss?
Yeah.
Okay. I did not know that was Carrie Russell in that costume until we got home.
Oh, okay.
For 43, she looks great in that costume.
Yeah. She, I thought at first, when I heard her accent, I thought it was Karen Gillan.
Me too.
And I asked my sister, and she's like, no, that's Felicity. And I was like, okay.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
General Hux being the traitor. What'd you think of that?
Once again, I felt that, like, a lot of this movie, it was good, but it was rushed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's like, I'm the traitor. And they're like, why do you hate the Empire? He's like, no, I don't want you guys to win. I just want Kylo to lose.
Yes.
And I thought that was one of the most pure motives in the entire fucking movie, was he didn't care which side won. He just wanted Kylo to get fucked. Lose.
Yeah. I thought that was awesome.
I thought it was brilliant. But, so, and then 2 seconds later, it's undone because he gets shot. Tell Kylo that we found our traitor.
Yep.
Like, that was it. Done.
So the ending we get, obviously the ending happens. The final order, the first order is destroyed. The Siths are destroyed, essentially.
Yeah.
We've talked about how Kylo dies.
Yep.
So at the ending of the movie, we get Rey, who goes back to, it's not Hoth.
Tatooine.
God, you know, sometimes things just escape your brain.
Yep.
And buries Luke and Leia's lightsabers in the ground. And then
not with a shovel, but with the Force.
Right. And then takes the name Skywalker.
Yep.
And it's Rise of Skywalker.
Yep.
So they're trying to say, oh, the Skywalker story is over. Doesn't it feel like it's just begun?
Yes.
For this, I want to see Rey again.
Yep.
I want to see Finn. I want to see Poe. I was thinking about this midway through the movie. Poe, a character who was supposed to be a one and done kind of character at the beginning of the
part. Yeah, he was
seven,
supposed to die in that crash.
Yeah. And that was the end of him. Has become this character in the movie, like one of the most pivotal characters.
And one of the most fun.
Oh, yeah. But I like these characters together. I want Lando Calrissian was an awesome cameo.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
And kudos to Billy Dee, because the man doesn't get around well anymore.
No, he doesn't. I mean, and he's 82.
Yeah, and he did a great job of, you know, having Cloud City on his cane.
Yeah.
But, you know, stumping around.
Yeah, he did good.
I'd like to talk for a minute about the biggest issues that I had with this.
Okay.
Aside from, you know, that it was two directors over three movies.
Right.
The biggest issues that I had that were, like, niggling technical ones, etc. It really bothered me that the first time we see Rey in this movie, she's levitating herself in all those rocks.
Yeah.
And moving them around. It's not like they're just floating. Like, she's got active rocks moving around her. She's floating. And then she's like, they're not with me. And she does this, like, little flip down and steps down like she's walking on air, gets down on the ground. Okay? I'm establishing something here. Later, when she's climbing up to find One-Eyed Willie's treasure, okay?
In the crash Death Star?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's struggling to climb. Like, she is legitimately almost falling.
Yeah.
Like, oh. And then she jumps over that one piece. She's,
that,
like,
yeah.
holding on and trying to pull herself up. Are you fucking kidding me? Levitate yourself up there.
Yeah,
because then 5 minutes later, she's fighting Kylo out on the deck of it, and they're crouching tiger, hidden dragoning
yes,
through the
are.
Weeds.
Yep.
So I don't like it when they forget that they have these powers.
Yeah, I didn't think of that, but you're right.
So that bothered me. It really bothered me, the dagger. The dagger I was fine with up until she pulled that little compass out of the hilt and had to line up the crash to Death Star. This is supposed to point the way to the OnStar for the planet that they're going to.
Right, but my
ExxonMobil.
But here's my thing. I went with the assumption that he built that after it was crashed.
Who built that?
What's his nuts? The guy that made the dagger.
Who made the dagger? We still never established who made the dagger. It was a Sith artifact.
No, but the guy who used it to kill Rey's parents.
So you think that he made a dagger and inscribed how to find the OnStar to get to ExxonMobil?
Yeah.
And then pulled out the hilt and stood in the exact spot that she was standing in to measure it, to point to the direction of it, but then just left it there and said, I don't need to get that. I'll just come back later. Like, why would he have written a map to something that powerful and then just left it there? It wasn't his. He would have said, I'm going to fucking get it.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Okay. It really bothered
me. I know. I got no argument. You're right.
I feel like it was a huge plot hole. And, yeah. The other thing, well, it's kind of a two-parter. One, the Emperor has secretly built an entire fleet of Star Destroyers underground.
Sure.
An entire fleet of Star Destroyers that have the capability of destroying a planet.
Yep.
As my sister said, she said this very wisely, has anybody ever thought of the ramifications of destroying a planet? Like, if you kill the entire population of a planet, that's one thing. If you destroy the planet itself, that fucks up gravity in the entire galaxy. That can throw other planets off their trajectory. Not to mention the fact that there's now shards of this planet floating out in space to destroy everybody.
Sure.
And yet they're just doing it willy-nilly. They're like, let's destroy that one. Let's destroy that one. Let's destroy that one.
Well, when the sun goes supernova and burns up everything in its reach, wouldn't that do the same thing?
No, because that destroys everything. This is destroying one planet. Like, if we destroyed Mercury right now, it would fuck up the other planets that are around it. It would fuck up all their trajectories.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I was just trying to come up with an argument.
Oh, absolutely, and I welcome that.
Yeah, you know? No, you're right there. Yeah, if just Mercury got destroyed, it would fuck up everything else in the gravitations. Yeah, okay, yeah, you're right.
But not to mention the fact that why was Starkiller Base such a big thing if it was a whole planet that needed to fire that when now it's mobile? And he could have just sent, like, one of these Star Destroyers out there and been like, hey,
but
don't worry, I got a million more.
So... okay, no, I got what you're saying.
Yep.
Argument to that is Palpatine didn't build Starkiller Base, and he's using technology that those people didn't have.
Fair enough.
Because he's using this dark side enhanced technology that he has hidden away.
Right.
That's hidden where people can't go or find, where he's building all this stuff as, you know, as opposed to these people. You know.
Fair enough. I'll concede that one. The last major point that I had issue with was the fact that ExxonMobil was out in the unknown system.
Yes.
Nobody had tracked it. Nobody had ever explored the planet. They had no idea what they were getting into. They were flying blind, essentially.
Yeah.
Ray had to send them coordinates to plot a path to it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great. I love it. Why is it then that when they said, we've got to go over there and help her, back her up, that Poe was like... they've got one tower that's beaming out signals to all the ships. And here it is on the ground, and that's what we've got to aim for.
Yeah.
Plus...
I had that issue.
Why
did they... I did like how they went, oh, they're going for the tower. Shut it off then.
Right.
I did love that.
Love that. But why is it that they all swooped down to go to the tower, but they had to send in horses? Like, why did it have to be a ground assault by people on horseback? What were they going to do to that tower that a fighter couldn't do from the sky?
Well, the argument they made later was is that when they landed on that Death Star to try to Star Destroyer to try to stop that tower, it was they could neutralize speedsters or whatever you call speed bikes, however you call them.
Mm-hmm.
Which they can't neutralize the animals. But you're kind of right. I mean, why do they need to do a ground attack on that tower and they just swoop down and... Yeah. Yeah.
It just
they didn't really establish why they had to do the ground attack.
And even then, like, the Star Destroyer that had the backup tower on it...
Yeah.
Again, a quick strafing run.
Right.
Gone.
Less dramatic.
Yeah. And they had to find a reason to show the people on horseback again.
Right. But less dramatic.
Otherwise, I mean, I love this movie. You know, Sam had some problems that I kind of counterpointed. You know, he said the Emperor wanted Rey to strike him down, and she did. No, she didn't.
No, she didn't.
He struck himself down.
Yeah,
she did. Just deflected his lightning.
Right.
And it went back on him. That was his own power ripping him apart.
Right.
So I can't really give you that one.
Boing flip.
I love the new droid.
Yep.
He was great because he actually had a voice.
Yep.
No, thank you. Yep. She goes to bed. No, thank you.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
It reminded me of Sean from The Good Doctor. No, thank you. First autistic droid in Star Wars. Yeah. Actually, I don't know. C-3PO, maybe. But anyway. So, yeah. I liked it. Critics and haters be damned.
Yeah. I want to touch on something real quick, which I had to look this up because I wasn't sure. Okay. But they had a lot of actors making voice cameos.
Yes.
And Jesus. I found this out because, all right. Oh,
this was beautiful.
Of all things, the day we went and watched Star Wars, or the night before maybe. Mm-hmm. No, it was the night. It was that fucking night. My wife is watching Friends, mm-hmm. and Freddie Prinze Jr. is on Friends. And she's like, he hasn't been anything forever. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. So I pull him up on Wikipedia, start rolling through to see the last movie he's been in. I'm like, fucking Rise of the Skywalker. Voice of Kid, fuck you! Like, I was so pissed off. I've avoided the internet all day from Thursday night through to then. You know what I mean? And, like, I get this one, like, I know it was just a little spoiler, but still, that pissed me off.
All I could think of is, like, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Nobody expects a spoiler when they're trying to look up a guy who's on Friends.
Yeah. So I'm looking, oh, fucking great. So I'm like, all right, because he was, like, Kanan Jarrus. And I'm like, fucking horse shit. And then I'm like, I didn't watch the show, but his character's dead. And this is a cartoon character, and it's only a voice cameo. How the fuck are they doing that in this movie? Oh, I guess we'll find out. I completely fucking forgot by the time that scene came around until the scene started. And then I went, oh, it makes sense. Yeah. But still, I just got so annoyed that I saw that early in the day because I'm trying to avoid everything.
That's funny as shit.
So we get a bunch of reprisal voice cameos at different times. We got Andy Serkis as Snoke. We got James Earl Jones as Darth Vader.
Which, that was cool.
Yeah.
Like, hearing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we got Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker. And then I'm going to name Olivia Diablo apparently played Luminara Uduli. Ashley Eckstein as Ahsoka Tano. Jennifer Hale as Aya Sekura. Samuel Jackson as Mace Windu. Ewan McGregor as Alec Guinness.
Technically, you're not
and
wrong.
Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan Kenobi. I love the fact they did both. And granted, Alec Guinness, they had to digitally alter his voice from archives. But the fact they did
both. I thought you were going to say digitally alter his voice from dead.
No, from the archives. So, like, they had to, for what he said, they had to put it together. But I love the fact they had both their voices in there. Frank Oz as Yoda. And then this is where we got Freddie Prinze Jr. as Kanan Jarrus, and then we got Liam Neeson's Qui-Gon Jinn. That was so badass.
Yeah. I love that they did the cartoon versions too. You know, yes. Ahsoka Tano and Kanan. Oh, so good.
That was awesome. And we had
fun
seen,
trivia, by the way.
We had seen Kanan's ship in Rogue One, and we saw it again as one of the many ships coming in when Lando Calrissian and Chewie came up with the, I know, I've been getting chills talking about this
you
movie
know,
all
I'm
night.
I'm pretty sure that those are all on Disney Plus now.
Yes, they are.
I gotta go watch those.
Yeah, they are.
I really owe it to myself
to watch those. It was just, I like how they did that. And I know they're saying this is the end of the Skywalker saga, but like I said a few minutes ago, I want to see more of these characters. I don't want to see less.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're not going to stop making Star
like
Wars
said,
movies.
Let's do a spinoff that is Finn and Poe.
Who are they going to fight? If the Final Order's down, there's no other baddies. Well, guess what? The freaking Empire got destroyed at the end of Return of the Jedi. And then by The Force Awakens, we had the First Order.
But, dude, even in between, we're watching The Mandalorian right now.
Right, and there's still the Imperial troopers. And yeah, they're still there.
Yep.
You know, I mean, but they're trying, well, no, we just fucking killed everybody. Not every stormtrooper was there. No. You know, not every, like, yes, the Supreme Leader Snoke is dead. Supreme Leader Kylo Ren is dead. You know, all the major generals are dead. Guess what? When World War I was over, Hitler came along. You know what I mean? Like, there's still a baddie out there somewhere that's going to rise to power now that these, and there's still going to need to be someone.
They made an entire extended universe of books based on that.
Right. So I want to see, and I get it. They just did three movies. Okay, well, I still want to see Rey. I want, give him 5 years off. Do other stuff in between. Give him 5 years off. I mean, my biggest fear is we went so long between the first trilogy, the second trilogy, and then this trilogy. I don't want to wait that long again.
I will tell you that they're not going to make another trilogy.
I've read that. They're not, no more trilogies.
But now that, okay, 80% of the top grossing movies this year were all movies under the Disney umbrella.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy. To think that they are not going to move forward with more Star Wars
no.
is insane.
People want it now more than ever.
Right. The Mandalorian is
yes.
very much proof of that. But I think you will see that. I think that, you know, now that it's John Boyega and Oscar Isaacs
yeah.
on the press tours were just as goofy and even more fun than their characters in the movies.
Right.
They want more of this. And they would do more if they were asked.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of them saying, okay, now that the dust has settled, what can we do with you guys?
I mean, we at the end of Solo, they established that Darth Maul was back.
Right.
I want to see that story.
You can. It's in the cartoons.
Okay. Are those cartoons still part of canon?
Yes. Yeah, all the cartoons are canon. All
right. Well, I wasn't
and
sure.
And that's why the voices were in there of, like, canon.
They eliminated. Well, not I know, but was that cartoon part of canon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, still, I want to see that, though. I want to see that live-action yep. style. I want to see. I mean, we got the Obi-Wan Kenobi series coming. We have season two of The Mandalorian coming. You can't tell me we're not going to have more movies in the theaters.
Oh, yeah.
But my next comment was like, we can't just have standalones. People will say, well, Rogue One was a standalone. It was, but it wasn't because it tied directly into A New Hope.
Technically, The Mandalorian's a standalone.
Currently, it is, yeah. But it's on TV. It's not in the theater. Like,
right.
I would have gone to the theater to see The Mandalorian. Absolutely. But.
And you wouldn't have realized how much you liked it.
Right, exactly. But when I'm just like, but that's why, oh, no more trilogies. Well, okay, well, this really wasn't a trilogy. It was 9 fucking movies mm-hmm. spread out over 42 years. Right. Not a trilogy.
But nobody should ever say never.
That and you know, Vince McMahon, the WWE, has always said never say never.
Pretty sure plenty of people have said it beyond Vince, but
I'm just saying though, but like that's the one that's my go to it, because you never know who's gonna come back. And anyways, I hate the idea of not seeing these characters again.
I hear you.
Because they're all young.
Dude. We're getting an Obi-Wan movie, okay?
Well,
and how many years has it been since... Right. How many years has it been since Ewan McGregor donned that cloak?
Right, a long time. I get that.
And yet they were like, he was popular enough. So yeah. I'm telling you, you're not going to have to worry about it.
I just don't want to wait 10 years to get more of Ray, Finn, and Poe. That's what I mean.
I don't think you are. No, Disney is a juggernaut right now.
Yeah.
They are making money no matter what they do. Yeah. I want to see... You know what I want to see? I want to see a crossover. I want to see the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda show up with these characters.
Yes.
You know, and the Mandalorian's old and he's hung up his armor.
Yep. That'd be cool.
But Baby Yoda could be, you know, what did we figure? He'd be like 80 now or something?
Yeah.
Maybe check in on him when he's 100. Let's see what Finn and Poe are up to.
Right.
They get, oh my God, those three having adventures across the sky? Oh, that'd be so good. Anyway. Fun fact, by the way, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah.
is married to Buffy.
I knew that.
Yeah, since 2002.
Yeah, they have been for a long time.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, New Hope 77, Strikes Back 1980, Return of the Jedi 83. That's respectable.
Mm-hmm.
But then fucking...
That was 6 years.
16 years later.
Yep.
We get Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. So like every 3 years...
Don't forget that in between, we got the digital remaster.
I forget about it. And then 2005 to 2015. So 20 years. Wait, 10 years. Sorry, 10 years. Felt longer, though.
Yeah.
Boy, it was only 10. It really felt longer than 10 years.
It did.
Yeah.
Probably because Revenge of the Sith left such a bad taste in our mouths.
Yeah.
That it was a lifetime. Well, honestly, 2005 to 2015 was a lifetime.
It really was.
So much shit happened. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the two of us both essentially got divorced in that period of time.
Yeah. 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 No, we did.
I mean, in that 10-year span of time, you had your kids.
Yeah. 2005 to 2015, I had all three of my kids.
Yep. Yeah.
It's fucking crazy to think about out loud.
Yeah. So to say that it felt like forever, that's a pretty... Yeah, yeah. Like, that was a very full 10 years.
Yeah, because Kanan was born in 2006. Yeah, a kid loved Star Wars more than I did.
I watched Lennon's Things close down in 2008. Well, helped it close down.
Yeah, helped it, yeah.
Got my divorce, in a sense.
Yep.
Went to school. I mean, it's been a very full 10 years. A lot of shit has happened.
But if you think about this, we got Force Awakens in 15, Rogue One in 16, Empire in 17, Last Jedi in 17, Solo in 18, and then 19 we got Rise of Skywalker. We're getting The Mandalorian right now. We know we're getting Ewan McGregor. There's no other movie on the horizons.
Right.
Because I guess after Solo, they decided we're not doing another standalone movie.
Didn't they make some kind of weird timeline that they said they were going to alternate years between Star Wars movies and Avatar movies?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I thought that's what they had said. So I think that we've got more on the horizon. But, yeah. I'm going to look it up real quick. So this was May 8th of this year. So right after, you know, Star Wars Day. Disney announced on Tuesday that it is producing three more Star Wars films that will hit theaters starting in 2022.
That's 3 years!
This means that there will be a three-year hiatus between Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker and the next film. Two more Star Wars films will follow in December of 2024 and 2026.
Yeah.
So basically they're going to do a Star Wars movie and Avatar movie. Star Wars movie and Avatar movie. Star Wars movie and Avatar movie.
I don't care about Avatar movies. I'm not going to watch any of them.
Yeah, who asked for those?
No one.
Like, we all loved the first one. Like you said, it was an experience to see it in 3D in the theater. It was amazing.
At home, it's just a movie.
And it's been too many years. It's kind of like the fourth Matrix. Yeah. Like, it's been too many years, guys. Nobody wants it back.
Well, here's a question for you. We are 2 hours and 20 minutes into this episode.
Oof, that's rough.
Do we want to save Mr. Robot for next week?
We can do that.
Because we're not going to have a lot to talk about next week.
No. I'll have Witcher.
Yeah.
I'm sure you will as well.
Yeah, but I mean, otherwise, there's like no other shows on this week.
Yeah. Let's save Mr. Robot.
In the show notes, just put we're going to save Mr. Robot to the end.
Yeah.
Well, to next week, that is. All right. Well, that's the show. Then that's everything. We talked a lot. I got a sore throat tonight. I'm down half dozen cough drops. That was your MO like a year and a half ago.
I know.
But yeah, thanks for listening. Next week we'll be back. I'm Superstar Mile on Twitter.
And I'm the Quantum Geek G33K.
It's the show.
It sure is.